it's easy business, that sort of thing. And we can post, if we need to post an email or a link, we will do it in that Q&A. So we'll get started and we can get our, if we can ask our, no, we're gonna start. Okay. Good evening, everyone. This meeting is hosted by Community Education Council for District 30 and co-presidents Deborah Alexander and Roberto Cruz and CEC Administrative Assistant and Jack of All Trades, Gail Cohen. And we're happy to have our superintendent, Dr. Composto, joining us. We are so appreciative of his never-ending time and patience for us all. We have Spanish interpreters here. They're working on a separate line. Thank you so much to them for being here with us and providing this important service to our Spanish-speaking families. I would ask all participants and remind myself to please speak slowly to allow the interpreters to keep up. The interpreters will now announce instructions in Spanish for attendees who may wish to dial into the Spanish line at this time.
Hi, the following services will announce in Spanish that we're offering Spanish interpretation. Buenas tardes. Para español, por favor, marque al número 347-966-4114 y ingrese el ID de conferencia 223-666-980, numeral. Si desea escuchar audio en español, pero desea permanecer en esta sala de conferencia con Zoom para poder ver el audio en su computadora, silencie su computadora y el volumen y marque su teléfono en la línea de conferencia en español. Nuevamente, la línea de conferencia en español es 347-966-4114. Y ingrese el ID de conferencia 223-666-980, numeral. Gracias. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to remind everyone that this is a public meeting, even though we are on Zoom. It is also being recorded. Please, please keep your microphone muted when you are not speaking. Tonight, we are going to have four different public comment sessions. So that's four different opportunities to speak. Based on different topics. So the first is after the superintendent's supervisory announcement. We invite anyone who would like to comment on that announcement up at that time to give a comment. The second is after our presentation on school climate and wellness. You can comment on, again, only on that topic. General public comment will be later. We have a presentation of a resolution, resolution 146. You can comment after that about that resolution. And then finally, at the end of our calendar meeting, we will have a public agenda and speaking time, at which time you can speak on any topic you like. Comments are limited to 2 minutes. You will be given a 15-second warning before your microphone will then be muted. We apologize for the abruptness, but we try to hear from as many people as possible. I'm sure you'll understand. First, we're going to take comments from the participants who have joined via computer in this Zoom room. You can press the hand icon at the bottom. I'm sure you're mostly familiar with this by now, and you can raise your hand. Just as a reminder, you click on participants at the bottom of your screen. We will call on those speakers in the order in which they raise their hands, and then we'll manually unmute your microphone. When your name is called, please give us your name and what school your child or children attend in District 30, or if they're in a different district. If you do not have a child in the school, if you're a teacher or have another connection to District 30, please let us know that as well. While this is a public meeting and anyone may speak, we are first and foremost interested in the thoughts of the community in District 30. Thank you for understanding that. Second, we will take comments from participants who have called in by phone. Gail will call out the last four digits of your phone number and will manually unmute your line to allow you to say yes or no if you would like to say something. If you do want to speak, please state your name and where your child or children attend school, same protocol. Third, we will take comments from participants who have called in for interpretation. I will now call the meeting to order at 6:38 p.m. Shannon Lee, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Good afternoon. Good evening, everyone. Ms. Deborah Alexander?
Present.
Mr. Roberto Cruz?
Present.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg?
Present.
Ms. Katrina Harris?
Present.
Ms. Fatima Lucari?
Present.
Myself, Shannon Lee, present. Ms. Amina Mazina? Ms. Danny Moore? Ms. Nula Odorchi?
Present, sorry.
Oh no, thank you. Mr. Chuck Park?
Present.
And Mr. Scott Sharon?
Present.
Those of you who are accustomed to our council and our members might be noticing that we have two new names and faces here tonight. So without further ado, I am pleased to introduce our two newest members. Ms. Danny Marr and Mr. Chuck Park were both appointed by the borough president, Ms. Sharon Lee, and we are so incredibly thrilled to have them. I'm going to put them on the spot and ask if they would like, no pressure, if you want to say hi, introduce yourselves, where your kids go to school, please feel free now, and you don't have to if you don't want to.
You going, Chuck?
The floor is yours. Go ahead. I'll go next.
Okay. Hi, I'm Danny. I have two children in District 30. One is at 384 in first grade, and my other one is starting pre-K at the District 30 pre-K centers. I am in Long Island City. I've been living here for about our sixth year here, and I'm excited to be here and stand up and advocate for our parents.
Thank you so much. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you.
Chuck?
Hey, everybody. Muy buenas tardes. I live in Jackson Heights. I have an eight-year-old at PS69 here. I've been living here for about a year now, but I was born in Flushing. I grew up in and around Queens. I'm really excited to get more involved, be a voice of the parents in and around Jackson Heights, and I guess in all of CC30. So yeah, definitely reach out to me personally or via these meetings to make your voice heard. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, we're so happy to have you too. So our first order of business tonight is the superintendent's supervisory appointment announcement. Dr. Composto, take it away.
Okay, so first of all, good evening and welcome to our two new members. You have joined the best CEC in all of New York City. Thank you for joining and be a part of these wonderful people. With that being said, we're going to move on. I am so happy to introduce our newly appointed principal of PS300, Sunita Rampachan. Sunita, I met her as a teacher in PS300, and I remember when the principal asked me, could she be an AP? And we looked at her, and she was an AP, and did an outstanding job. Well, this year, I'm proud to say to you, she is our new appointed principal. And here's a person called a baptism by fire. She got this job and we went right into this whole pandemic, this whole piece. And she has been a trooper, a true professional. She has led that community. She has helped those teachers to stay together to ensure quality education for our children. She has worked with our parents. I am so pleased and so happy to tell you that Sunita is a welcome addition to PSIS 300 and certainly to District 30. So welcome, Sunita.
Thank you, Dr. Composto, and thank you all the members from the CEC. It's an honor to be a part of the District 30 community and continue to grow and learn in this community. My passion has always been with Q300 and the students and the families. I have one parent on the call right now. So hi, Deb. Thank you for always the support and the love you've given me. I'm looking forward to an amazing journey at Q300. And I'm always here for my students and my families and my community. Thank you for having me.
Before I invite anyone else to come speak from the public, I do want to use my position to go first. And I just want to say that I've been around now a bit. I have my child is at Q300, he's in eighth grade. So I've been now a public school parent for a while, but it has been such a pleasure. As Dr. Composto said, baptism by fire. So you really know a person when you see them in the middle of a trial like this. because there's no other way to be except, you know, your best. And boy, have we gotten Sunita's best. She is a combination of professionalism, creativity, and warmth. And by those three things, I mean, for professionalism, we never feel adrift as parents. So there's so much uncertainty now, but Sunita on a daily, weekly basis, whether it's a responsiveness to emails or proactive communication with the community, we feel reassured as a community, as much as she knows, which sometimes she's not been given a whole lot, she gives back to us. So we don't feel like we're floating around not knowing what's going on. And then creativity, I always feel like an option on the table is thinking outside the box, that maybe it won't happen, but maybe it will. And I can always approach her with an idea and know that she'll consider it. Maybe the constraints won't allow for it, but I know that that's always an option. And that for that, I'm incredibly grateful. I never feel like we're cookie cutter as a school, which makes me believe that my child isn't viewed as cookie cutter, which is really great. And then warmth. No matter how frenetic this time has been, I don't know how she has kept a smile on her face through every Zoom. I couldn't do it, but she has stayed positive, calm, and been incredibly generous with her time. She's never let us see her sweat. So I want to thank you and welcome you and say I'm so proud to call you my principal.
Thank you for those kind words, Deb. I really appreciate it.
So now I would like to invite anyone from the public who would like to speak to raise your hand, if you would, and we are happy to call on you. I don't see any hands raised at the moment.
I see one, Jenny.
Yep, I had a feeling. Go ahead, Ms. Lando, you are unmuted.
Hey, can you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
I have the pleasure of not only being a lifelong District 30 parent with Dr. Composto, so thanks for that, but also two kids at Q300, one just left, and I'm their parent coordinator. But I'm speaking as a parent when I say that everything I hear from our community is always about transition and change. And as you mentioned, Deb, Sunita has been handling all of this like a trooper. And to the point where, knowing what I know both as staffer and parent, my own child will be doing blended learning because I trust the system that she has in place at her school with our staff.
Yeah.
And I think I could say that about a lot of District 30, but if I didn't have faith in our principal, my child would be doing fully remote. So that is my parent vote of confidence for my principal. But also she's pretty fun to work with. And this summer, as you know, it's only principals and parent coordinators who work. And I have hardly spoken with my husband. So she's my work wife. Thanks, Sunita, and congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Thank you, Jenny.
I see Gayathri. You have been unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for letting me to talk. I want to congratulate Sunita. Congratulations to you. I am a parent of Riddhi, who has just joined kindergarten in Q300. And I just wanted to use this opportunity to mention about the support that we have been getting from Sunita and her team. It's amazing. And I second your thought when you mentioned that she always has a smile on her face. Yes, I definitely agree to that. And I am really happy and glad for my child to be in that school. And I'm sure we'll have a wonderful journey for her there. So thank you so much. And congratulations to you, Sunita.
Thank you.
I think that's awesome that we had a kindergarten and an eighth. So it shows you the range that you're reaching. So that's kind of cool. Oh, I see another hand. Dolores, you are ready to talk. You have been unmuted.
Hello, Sunita. Congratulations.
Hi.
I had the pleasure to work with her this year. I'm a parent of another school, but I was given the opportunity to work with her. So I want to say congratulations once again.
Thank you, Dolores.
Okay. And Dr. Kamasi, was this our first Zoom supervisory appointment? I think it is.
I'm
sad about that. We've got to do a makeup at some point, because the balloons and the bottle of wine from Miss Chang and like the whole thing is missing. And
yes,
we'll do a redo at another time.
Yeah.
So with that, I don't see any other hands raised. So,
Deb, can I say one more thing? I just wanted to just say a special thank you to Dr. Composto. He has definitely been my support through this all, like any minute, any time of the day, I can pick up the phone and call him.
Can you give me a minute, please, Anne?
I could pick up the phone and call him, and he always has an answer for me, or he'll find the answer for me. So I thank you, Dr. Composto, and his team for helping me through this as well.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
He has an excellent track record for our principals, so we thank him for you. Okay, so now we are going to go to our presentation. We are very fortunate to have, I have to find you. Gail, have you unmuted Katie? Gail, you're muted.
Katie's already a panelist, so she
can. Fantastic. Okay, so we have Katie, I'm gonna mess your last name up. Katie J, she'll tell us how to say it, from the office, from the Department of School Climate and Wellness. We thought it might be, I spoke with Katie over the summer, and she told me a lot of the amazing things that Deputy Chancellor Robinson and her office were doing. I would love for her to explain what the Department of School Climate and Wellness is. She can do it better than I. And then some of the things that we can expect in this new era of this new climate for our kids in terms of that office. So without further ado, Katie, take it away.
Thanks very much, Deb, and hello to all of District 30 CEC. I'm so happy to be here tonight, and I will talk a little bit about my division, which is the Division of School Climate and Wellness. I'll talk a little bit about in general terms and then talk a little bit about the work that we're doing for this obviously very special year that we're dealing with here. As Deb mentioned, I'm the chief of staff for the division, and I work directly for Deputy Chancellor LaShawn Robinson, who's a DOE schools graduate, a former school social worker, principal, superintendent, and now is the deputy chancellor running this division. The division was created just about 2 years ago now, just a little bit over, and with the goal of bringing together different parts of the DOE that lived in different worlds, focused specifically on supporting the whole child and particularly the aspects of the whole child that have to do with a child's health and safety. And we say that we don't just mean physical self health and safety, although of course that's very, very important. We're also talking about social, emotional, and mental wellness and how we bring all those things together and how we help schools support those parts, particularly through our supportive environment framework. So our office consists of six, our division consists of six offices. The Office of Safety and Youth Development, which handles safety for the Department of Education, but also, provides guidance and development for guidance counselors, social workers, and other support staff like that, and does a lot of our specialty support programs in that way. The Office of School Health, which is probably best known for managing our school nurses, but also our school-based health centers and any vision and dental screening or health services we provide in schools. That's an office that is run jointly with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and my division acts as the primary liaison for them. Although obviously, when there are bigger health issues like we're all dealing with now, the entire DOE is very involved in that. The other offices are the Public School Athletic League, which people are familiar with. Those are the high school sports teams, and that's a great example of a non-academic support that we believe is really important for students' development, and that we believe it's very important for kids to have access to. The Office of School Wellness Policies, which primarily handles health and physical education in schools, providing guidance and support for those teachers, programming and curriculum, and other specialty programming there. We have the Office of Equity and Access, which focuses on the DOE issues where we might see disproportionate access or inequitable access to certain resources. The best example I can think of this is advanced placement classes. We look for schools that may not have been able to offer advanced placement classes before, and then work with them to help make them not only available, but to sustain them in the school throughout the year. And they have a lot of other programs like that, but that I think is the best known one. We also have the Office of Community Schools, which I think everyone's familiar with. That's our team that runs all of our great community schools, which are such an important thing in so many communities. They provide so many resources for students and families. But that also, they also oversee, among other things, the after-school programming and supports for homeless students. So those are our offices, and together they're really brought together by the idea that they're providing, I don't want to say non-academic supports because that's not true, but these sort of additional supports that help a child develop not only academically, but socially, emotionally, and of course making sure that they have mental and physical health. So that has been, our goal and the goal of creating the division and bringing those teams together. Pandemic obviously has brought a lot of this into sharp focus. In addition to working with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene on our health guidance, and of course on all the support schools need as we, transition into blended learning. We've also worked very hard. One of the things that we knew the minute we went remote in March was that students, whenever they did return to school, were going to be experiencing a lot of trauma. The whole city has experienced a lot of trauma and grief, and that has a definite effect on student behavior. And so we, wanted to prepare schools for that when they return and how to support those students in the best way. We felt very fortunate that we had already started to build that foundation over the last 2 years, but we're able to build on it more, conducting a lot of training, even in the spring, for educators about trauma-responsive education practices, and, that has continued to roll out and is going to be something that we continue to roll out throughout this year. The other, big things that we've worked on, obviously, I think another big area, obviously, safety is very important to anybody who has a child in a public school, and so that area is something that we've worked on a lot. Talking about safety, not just as, how do you make sure, there aren't, how do you stop kids from fighting? What are the protocols for suspending kids, disciplining kids, but also how do you support kids who are dealing with issues to prevent those things ahead of time? This is the team that works on our discipline code and behavioral guidance and works with schools to develop those things. So that's a little overview of what the team does. I'm happy to take questions. Obviously, I think a lot of people have questions about health and safety at this time, which I totally understand. I'll be happy to talk to that to the extent that I can as well.
Thank you so much, Katie. I think, I don't know how it's going to sound, your office is not one of the offices that we're so familiar with. We know about enrollment. We know about School mm-hmm. Construction Authority. It doesn't, and you say it's a new office, so mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily occur to us, which is why we're so happy to have you, that mm-hmm. there's this whole department exists. And so it might not occur to some folks to ask direct questions your way. So while we are, we can open the floor now. If anyone would like to ask a question, just raise your hand. I'm going to open it first while people think about some questions that might be appropriate for you. I can open the floor to my council members to see if anybody has an immediate question regarding any of the areas that you mentioned.
So I do. So Katie has been helping us with the situation room. And I think it would be nice for her to explain this to the whole community because that's on my agenda. So, and I know she's an expert on that. So if you don't mind, Katie, I'd love for you to share the situation room and how it works with our CEC.
Absolutely.
Community,
of course. The Situation Room is a multi-agency initiative that was launched this Monday. I am somewhat pleased to report that I was there at 5:30 a.m. sharp this Monday. And it was something we set up in working with our partners at DOHMH and Test and Trace throughout the city to give schools a hotline to flag any reported COVID cases, to give them guidance on what to do and to provide them with the necessary next steps and materials they might need to communicate this out to their schools and family. So actually what I'm going to do, and I pulled this out because I want everybody to know, and I know there are always principals available, I'll share with you the phone number that principals should call if they have a COVID situation. That's 212-393-2780. 212-393-2780. I think a lot of principals may have seen that already, but we want to make sure that the word is out there. And I want to say, I think it's done a lot having it set up to have us all in the same room working on these things. Like I said, my division works very closely with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene in a normal time. That has only become more true. We sit next to each other in the room, and we 6 feet apart, of course, and we are able to talk openly about the situations or different cases, and I think it's making a big difference in the way we respond to schools. Our biggest priority is to be as quickly responsive to schools as possible and to get them a communication they can use so that everybody in the community knows what's going on. And that's really, I think, the most key thing for most school communities. Well, I found that most principals really want to communicate this out. Obviously, only staff are in building right now, but still, we know many communities want to be informed and want to know what's going on.
That's great. That's really awesome. So I will jump in with a question. Something that was sort of going around the Facebook world was the potential for, bullying is always a potential, but there is a fresh new sort of bullying that's going on with the virtual world. There were folks saying that kids should turn their cameras off and not have them. And, you know, then there's folks that say, no, the teachers need to see them, but the fears of looking at someone's house or showing your house or your room or taking screenshots, that sort of thing. How is the DOE approaching that?
So I'm going to address this from two angles. The first, I think you're talking about, potential, incidents between students, cyberbullying and the like. And I want to put that aside for one moment, because I think one thing that we did in the spring is with the very quick setup of remote is we tried to be very flexible on the pressures we put on families. Like, not everybody has a computer with a camera. We understand that. Not everybody feels comfortable having somebody in the living room. So while we wanted to always make sure schools were able to check in on kids, make sure they were okay, that their learning was accelerating, we tried to be flexible at what counted as attendance and what counted as, being in school that day. Now that's going to be a little sharper, I think, for this year. I know a lot of parents really wanted more screen time. And now that there is more device availability, there's more comfort, I think we're going to be able to see more of that. But yes, that does lead us to how do we handle issues when someone is remote learning. And one thing I'll say off the bat, on my team at the Office of Safety and Development, who is one of the best offices in the whole DOE, some of the best people I've ever worked with, we felt very strongly from the beginning that suspending a kid in remote is a little illogical, because where does that kid go, right there? So we tried to come up with a guidance document for schools that said suspension is not your answer here. This is a tool that you've had before and that it doesn't really work in this setting. Here are some things you can do. I'm really proud of schools. I think schools tried really hard to work that. And we had very few instances where we felt that, something warranted to the level of suspension in the spring. And almost all of them had to do with something. Nothing that stayed on the remote level warranted a suspension. So people were really great about coming up with that. And I, can't say enough about principals who got very creative, innovative during this time and making sure kids were supported. So that's going to carry over into blended learning. What we actually released this week is guidance about how to handle discipline in blended learning. Obviously you have in-person and you have remote. What do you do? How does that work? And I think to me, the biggest question was if you are doing some sort of disciplinary intervention with a kid, and they are in school 2 days a week, how do you count that out? Does are they missing 5 days of in-person learning? Are they missing 5 days straight of learning? So we tried to carry over what our existing behavioral guidance says and what the remote says to make it clear that, like, if you're suspending a kid, you're not suspending them from their remote days. You know, it's an in-person issue. And as much as possible, we've tried to be coherent in that and making sure that both of those policies, blend over into this coming school year. So that is the fresh thing that I think principals saw this week. Principals also got their annual letter to share with families about the discipline code and students' rights and where to find all that information. So I think families should be expecting to see that this week too. We're really trying for consistency there. I think that that's appreciated by a lot of people. And we're really trying to, I will say, I know there's lots of concern about health and safety protocol, the new health protocols. How does that work in terms of discipline? We're really trying to keep those worlds separate. I try to encourage people to think about it the same way we think about immunization requirements. And we know there are reasons why if you can't meet that particular health protocol, your child may be excluded, but everyone knows that's not a suspension, right? So I think that that's the area that we're trying to approach this with for schools.
You brought up a great word, and this may be a premature question, but I'm guessing your office is gearing up towards thinking about this, and a lot of people have said, so you probably won't be able to answer now, but it's on a lot of folks' minds with the advent, hopefully, of a vaccine. Mm-hmm. How is that going to affect the school year? And are there, you must know about the legal requirements for the current vaccines that we have now. How is the school system going to deal with that? And will it be required? And is it legal and all that stuff?
So, great question. And yes, something we have thought about. Deb knows this, just so the rest of you know, previously at the DOE, I worked on state policy and state legislative work, which means I am very familiar with these state vaccination laws and vaccination rules. Many of you may know that they were updated. I want to say it's only been a year or so ago, but it feels like 10 years ago. I don't know how the time flies during this kind of stuff. But that was a very recent thing that we had to newly comply with. I will say this, that the state primarily sets vaccination law regulations and guidance, and we, like any other district, aspire to meet that. They may recently made vaccination exemptions much more strict, much harder to get in response to some of the measles outbreak stuff. And as I think everyone probably is a little bit aware, the city Department of Health and Mental Hygiene did take some of its own actions in response to those measles outbreaks. So those mechanisms are in place. I would say largely we're going to follow the state guidance, and I don't, foresee a world where the state doesn't, make this, something everyone should do in order to be in public schools. But I'll add that, we know that not everyone's going to get the vaccine overnight. And that's a logistical factor we'll all have to think about as that happens. And then we cross our fingers and we hope that we can make it happen. I know that that's a big concern for a lot of people. And one other thing I want to add, because I think it's really important, is occasionally I, hear from a community, often an immigrant community, where there are a lot of rumors and fear mongering about, if you bring your kid to school, like they're going to vaccinate them with an unproven vaccine. Without your permission. That's absolutely not true. Sometimes I think, people pre-pandemic, there's lots of things, and any sort of health intervention with a child requires parental consent. And we do this with our school-based health clinics, who, as you may know, go beyond your average school nurse services for many. There's a strict parental consent thing that we follow. And I would urge you all, as, representatives of communities and parent communities, that when you hear that, to please allay that fear.
That is a great segue to a really much more pressing topic, which is the COVID testing. So mm-hmm. A lot of folks are saying, do I have to have a consent form, and who's doing this, and how will it work?
Right. You will absolutely parental consent is required to do any medical practice on a child. Absolutely. And that includes the COVID testing. I also want to be clear, and I think sometimes we blur the line a little because we work so closely with our sister agencies. We are not doctors. I'm certainly not a doctor. My boss is not a doctor. We defer always to the guidance and expertise of the doctors at health and hospitals and Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. And particularly for this initiative that I know the mayor announced a couple weeks ago now, they will be the ones who are doing any sort of testing in schools and school communities. Obviously with our part, with our helping them contact the, you know, follow the correct protocols that we use right now. And you know, there'll be a wide variety of health partners working on that with us. So I want to be very clear, like any medical things that happen are coming from medical experts, not from a random person in the school.
Do council members, I can talk to you.
I had a quick question. This is Chuck, I'm just going to jump in real quick. Just to confirm, the situation room sounds really great, but that's specifically a resource for principals and school administrators, not for like the general public or parents. Should parents look to like the state report card that I heard announced, or is there a good city resource or phone number that parents can call to get like the latest information on, let's say, COVID cases in a particular school, or for guidance on things like that?
Sure. So what the State Department of Health has said they are going to do is they're going to set up a dashboard for all school districts in the state where they, and we are already reporting to them, you know, regularly. It's not, it's the Department of Health. We report through them any cases in a school. I don't know when their dashboard will be up. I think that they said by the start of school. I think some districts in New York have started. So I actually should take a look and see if they started to post some of that information. But there will be a dashboard that we are required to also to make public as well. And I think, that's a big concern. I really hear that. I think, I know a lot of people are in buildings for the first time, contemplating sending their children back for the first time. Information feels shaky on the ground. Everyone in the city has been through a really traumatic experience. I'll tell you that, you know, and I think it's very hard in a system this big to get information to everybody as quickly as possible. I think it's important for us to be transparent, and I'm happy that the state set up this mechanism for us.
And thank you to Chuck. You can look in the chat. He posted I was just gonna say, I don't know that the data, I've gone to that before, and I don't think the data is necessarily
current. I don't think it is either.
But the platform is there, and hopefully will be updated soon. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. So other council members, anyone want to ask Katie a question? If not, I have more.
I have a couple of questions. One is about community schools. So we heard, you know, in the budget this year that money for community schools was cut. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means for existing schools that are designated as community schools? And the second question is, I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about what trauma-informed practices or pedagogy, like what that really means.
So yes, the community schools in the city budget was later than it usually is, which is unfortunate for school budgets, because then, you know, principals are left going like this until we are able to resolve that. And one of the last things that happened, very unfortunately, to my great dismay and my team's great dismay, is that there was a cut handed down on community schools. And that was very upsetting for us, because the community schools have done such a great job. They have a really great proven track record. And I think there's 111 and Long Island City High School in District 30. They're both great schools, great community schools. So
we also have IS 230 and 149 have a community school program as well.
That's great. Thank you, Dr. Capasso. I'm still showing my Long Island City Sunnyside bias there with my knowledge of the district. My team has been working with the city council and the Office of Management and Budget to try to restore some of that. And I think now that some of the budget, there's a lot of different pressure factors on the city schools budget right now. The state budget situation is very murky, and they have, in their most recent budget they passed, given themselves the ability to, if they decide to revoke up to 20% of our funding, which is just a fun little thing that we have to think about all the time. As everyone I think probably knows, federal relief aid is up in the air constantly. So there's been a lot of uncertainty about how we could possibly restore that. I think we have some steps forward there, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to ensure that we don't have to close any of the community schools as a result. But I don't wanna also say, like, my team has fought really hard to try to make things work, but it's a very difficult city budget situation, and I don't know that we'll be able to fully keep all of those programs going at community schools, but we're going to keep fighting for it and try to make it work.
And just about the trauma-informed.
Yeah. So I think that this is used a lot as a kind of buzzword thing. What I would like to actually do, and I'll share this over in the chat actually, is we released a couple weeks ago what we've called our Bridge to School plan, which is sort of a step-by-step guide for schools for the first few weeks of school on, you know, what to expect of students who are coming back, you know, who haven't seen their friends, who haven't seen their teachers, who have been dealing with loss and grief and a lot of trauma. I think that's a really good example of how we ask educators to sort of lead with that mindset. A lot of the early days of school are going to be very focused on that because otherwise kids can't learn. So I'd like to just share that with you. I think that that will be more helpful. I am myself and not a social worker or a mental health specialist, and I hate pretending to be one. So I think that would be most helpful.
I have a question from a parent in the Q&A. Are parents allowed to submit their pediatrician COVID test result instead of having it done in school? And can parents be there when their kids are being tested? Who will be doing these tests in school?
So what I'll say, I'll refer to what I said before, which is like ultimately we're going to defer to the decisions of the medical experts on that. What I'll say right now is what we bring to the table is our understanding of how schools work, of what parents feel comfortable with. I'll tell you, I've heard my boss say 1 million times, you should allow parents to be there if they can when their kids are having this being tested. That's our position, and we're going to push that with our partners in health. They, again, like at the end of the day, if they say like this is not a safe thing to do for people, like we're gonna take that into consideration, but we know that that's very important to people.
And this starts in October, correct?
Yes, it starts in October. It won't start until October. And I want to be clear, it will not be more than 20% of the school community. So I know there are people who are never going to feel comfortable with this. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, like it's going to be impossible for you to go to school. You know, it'll depend a lot on your school size and things like that, but it's never expected that every kid will be tested every day or even every month. And yes, to the second piece, I'll tell you personally, like obviously if we can have people verify pediatrician, you know, pediatrician notes where people can go to the doctor they feel comfortable with, we think that that's the best thing too, but we'll always defer to them on the final decision on that.
It's the testing is every month? Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure guidance is forthcoming because it's only September 15th and this isn't until October, but I assume, I'm guessing we will get more information as the schools figure this out. My note is obviously give parents enough notice so that, you know, they don't have overnight to figure out what's happening, but.
I hear that. Yes. I hear that. I can promise to the best of my team's ability, we will push for that.
Let's see, I have a non-related question. Any other council members have questions?
I think you touched on something quickly, if you don't mind. On trauma and grief, we know that a lot of the families have these, there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of uncomfortable experiences that parents and families and kids might have had. But then when kids are finally back in the school environment, they're not gonna have the same type of support network they would have had in the past. They won't be able to talk to friends so much. There may be stringent protocols that they'll be experiencing. Is that something that you can provide, be aware of that circumstance, that they're gonna be with friends, but not with friends? They'll be in a school environment, but told to space out and to, you know, keep your distance and to, you know, all of these other rules that'll be, they'll be unaccustomed to. Is that something that's also gonna be considered when you start talking about some of the trauma and grief aspect of it? Because there's no real consolation going to school and seeing your friends if you really can't see your friends. And not now, but maybe in a few months, that may be a real experience for a lot of our kids.
You mean because they'll have to be socially distanced, they won't be able to do a lot of the activities. Yeah, I mean, I think, I won't pretend, I don't think anyone's surprised. The school year is gonna look a lot different, there's no doubt. And I think it's going to be a transition for a lot of people. is there still a value in A, in-person learning, and B, like being in the same room as people and having that human interaction even at that space? I, as a human, think that it is, and I know whenever I get to do that, it makes a big difference for me. But yes, to your question, we are taking that into account. And I think I just put the Bridge to School plan into the chat, and I can share that, Deb, with you afterward if you want to distribute it. I think that there's, you know, as we expect, as kids are adjusting to this, I think that that's why in those first few weeks, this is so important. One thing I will add about this that I think is interesting is I worked as my division's representative for our regional enrichment center team, where a lot of the things that became part of our reopening health health policy and safety policy and general policy are where we learned a lot of these things. And it is amazing to see kids adapt and even thrive under these circumstances. One thing I was always amazed at when I got the opportunity to see RECs in action and interact with kids, you know, even virtually, was the way they, you know, wore the masks, the way that they, you know, understood the protocols they had to follow. And I that gave us a lot of hope that, like, this is something that kids will A, be able to manage, and B, it will be a positive thing for them. So I think that, you know, that's a smaller population than the whole system, but it gave us a lot to think about around that.
I want to jump in for a second. So I too had the pleasure of visiting these rec centers, and they're wonderful. And we intend to imitate a lot of the things that kids, you know, they may be wearing their masks, they may be 6 feet away, but guess what? They're kids and they act like kids. It was really good to see. But on the other note, all of our principals are prepared through social emotional learning with our children for the first couple of weeks, just to give them the space to talk about this trauma, to how they feel, what they're thinking. So we are certainly going to address it. And kids are so resilient. Every time I went into those rec centers, it would put a smile on my face. You wouldn't know that they had masks on, they were 6 feet apart, you know? They were just playing games that we have developed over time that give you the children that space that they need, that social distancing. So I think it's gonna be okay. As long as we give the children the opportunity to speak, we have counselors available, social workers as well. You know, as Kate says, that's an important piece for us. So they also will be doing lessons with our children, going into classrooms, working with teachers, and certainly working with individual children to help them.
Yeah, many thanks. Just one second thing. You know, such an eye-opener over the last few months that when we discovered that there's so many homeless families that, you know, it was unbeknownst to me, at least. The sixth thing on your list was homeless. There's a certain urgency to it in this time, because, yeah, you know, they don't have the resources, and they're the first ones that are going to be lagging that we have to really keep an eye on for. What does your department do specifically for homeless people or homeless students now?
So, so we have an office for students in temporary housing. That's the bureaucracy name for homeless students. And when we, you know, constituted this division and included the Office of Community Schools, that's when we decided that team was going to oversee that, because they had already such a proven track record of providing outside your average school services to students and families. So they've really taken on that work. And during remote learning, one thing that they did, which was incredible, is they had not just your their regular, you know, we have them called, you know, they're called STH liaisons, and then bridging the gap social workers, which are social workers specifically assigned to schools that have large homeless populations and, you know, are specifically intended to focus on that. But they also put together a team of tech ambassadors to work with homeless families, many of whom, you know, were receiving technology, had to order technology in order to get their kids up and going on remote learning. So one thing they did is, using, you know, these existing structures, and the one that they created is they instituted a system for doing a frequent check on these families, a wellness check, and they even, you know, we're able to survey families and say, what do you need the most? And in some ways, it's a unique population, but in some ways, they need the same things that all kids needed. Like, the social emotional learning came up a lot, you know, like the mental health, particularly not just for the students, but for the adults who were going through so much. That was something that we saw a lot. And then the little things, like, not a little thing, but having the right technology made a big difference, right, for getting people online. So I think To your point, this is exactly the population we're thinking about when we think about the benefits of blended and partial reopening, because these are the families that we know are going to need that support the most.
Is there like a hotline that they could contact if they needed it, like some way to get direct access to someone who could provide some assistance, some answers, because they'll get lost in the shuffle, and we have to try to avoid that as best we can, I think.
Sure, I'd be happy to provide like any our general public contact for any of that, but also to follow up with my team who works on this. There's a great team that works on this and work so hard to make sure that what you described, it does not happen, keeps their needs up at the forefront. So I'd be happy to follow more with that.
And I think the fact, you know, Einstein said in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. And I'm thinking the good news here is that our children will be 7 and 9 children in front of one teacher. And I would hope that that teacher will be able to, you know, understand what's going on and be able to pull a guidance counselor and the social worker, speak to the guardian to make sure that everything's okay. So that's the only thing good that I see so far, is that it's a really small group, 9 children, 7 children to one teacher. And hopefully this is going to be good for our children who are going to need it at this point.
All right. Oh, Danny, you popped up. Did you want to say something?
I have a quick question about the COVID testing, just to try to be clear. I know things change every day. So if the parents are refusing the medical consent, kids are being pulled into remote, and wouldn't that create a little bit of trauma in itself? Like, how are we handling that?
So I'll concede your first point that like this is a shifting still in development policy, and I think the question you're asking is an important one, right? Because we don't necessarily want to say just because you won't do the testing means you go remote. I want to, you know, no more than 20%
having like getting very angry about that and trying to prepare for that.
Oh yeah, look, yes, and look, they have every right to be. They need more information in order to make the decision about their kids. I get that.
Right.
And we share that with our health partners every day, for whom some of this is a little bit new, this sort of engagement and interaction. What I'll say is that the max of the school community that gets tested every month is 20%. So even if you have half of the parents that don't give the consent, you still have a good pool to work with for people who will give the consent. And I'll add that is, school community is not limited to students, right? So it's going to be a fairly big pool. I think the point that you're making is something that we have to be more clear about. I only am more reluctant to be more clear about it because I would need a medical person to say, like, this is how, from a scientific perspective, this is randomized testing and how it's actually effective.
Right.
Because we wouldn't want to do anything that takes away from the effectiveness, but I do think there are parameters to work with here. It's not the whole school community. We know some people are never going to be comfortable with it. And I think that there's a middle ground that we'll be able to work out.
I didn't realize it was 20% of the entire, everybody in the school. That's a very important point, I think, because, you know, if a school is 600 kids, a school community could be 800, and that changes the calculus a lot. We will await the guidance.
And that's my understanding of how it's going to work and how I think works best for school communities. So I hope that helps ease people as it gets more and more public.
Yes, an attendee just said, read my mind and said, if you're allowing people to opt their child out of testing, then aren't you just testing the same kids over and over again, or inviting no one to give consent, because why would you if, you know, your neighbor doesn't have to? So that's a great question.
Exactly the problem that I would be hesitant to address without a Department of Health and Mental Hygiene official by my side. So I agree. I think that is something that they need to make the final decision on.
Also question, if someone in the child's household has COVID, does that family have to disclose this to the school?
So we are talking about testing and tracing in the context of schools, because that's what I do and that's what you guys are here for. But obviously there is a entire test and trace system going on throughout the city right now. And so What I would say is someone tests positive that is not a student, but is lives with a student. It's the parent, it's the grandma, right? Test and trace then has to give guidance on what that individual's close contact should do. If, say, it's a student's grandmother, it's a multi-generational household, and they say, okay, who are your close contacts? And they find out, there's a kid at PS 111, and we have to make sure that, that kid now quarantines. Now we're directing the family to make sure that kid quarantines. So our partners at Test and Trace, because of the situation we set up, will now be able to say, by the way, you know, we can flag this for you. There's a close contact. But it's always helpful, and we hear this both ways, right? We hear it from DOHMH and Test and Trace as they go about their regular non-school-based activities. But we also hear many parents, people want to do what they can to make sure people are safe. They flag it for the principal, they flag it for someone in the school and say, just so you know, this happened, what's the next step? And that is the part we need to make sure that principals get the best guidance on. So I would say it's great if the family flags it. It's great. We don't require people to share medical information in that way, although I found many people are very eager to, almost to the point where I'm like, wow, you shouldn't, you don't have to send me all that. That's okay. But there are multiple pathways for that as well.
I have a raised hand here. Inara, I apologize. Sorawardi, you are unmuted.
Oh. Hi, my name is actually Yasmin Sarawardi. I'm using my daughter's Zoom account.
Had a feeling.
I had a question. So at our school, we're facing a teacher shortage right now, and there's currently no staffing for the remote only days for the blended learning students. So particularly for the vulnerable populations and the homeless children, low-income populations, like, are we worried about the instability that's involved in kids being in school fully 1 to 2 days a week, but then having no instruction at all for the remaining days? And like, how are we going to address this sort of structure and no structure during the week that they're facing?
Maybe Dr. Composto, you want to talk about staffing models, but what I'll say, and I don't consider myself, a pedagogue. I said I don't consider myself a doctor. I'm a person who speaks with people who are knowledgeable on these topics and then tries to help translate what they want to do into a working policy for people. But my understanding from an educator's perspective is that even with what you said, the instability, obviously it's great if your schedules are consistent. I know that helps kids a lot. Even then, there's a lot of value in that in person that they think outweighs the considerations. Dr. Capasso, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Right. So
we might also talk about this a little bit later if you want to keep it in your report. It's up to you.
I can do whatever. I think we should talk about. We have plenty to talk about. So we have presently asked for 543 teachers. And why I say that, District 30 is a really special district. We have lots of L children. So we need L teachers in live, and we need L teachers doing the remote. We have our special ed youngsters who we are very much care about and love. So we need special ed during the live and for the remote. We have a wonderful, wonderful dual language program. Same thing. We need live. We need remote. We have a gifted and talented program. Same thing. We need live, remote. And we have our youngsters in the middle, and they need live and remote. We need teachers in the middle school that are licensed, like we do advanced algebra for our eighth graders, so they get high school credit. So now we need a advanced licensed math teacher to do live and remote. So with that being said, we've asked for 543 teachers. Presently, we are still working with the downtown. They've given us coaches. We received our ULIT coaches. So schools have been trickling teachers in. We've had some ULIT coaches. We received teachers that were excess out of schools have been put back into schools. Principals who had vacancies and had money to pay for teachers, they've been encouraged also to hire teachers. And presently, today, we met with our principals again, and we got a list and we sent it down. Believe it or not, just before I got on this, I finished filling out the form asking for what the teachers need by license area, because that's an important piece for us. we don't only want a body in front of the children, we want the right body in front of the children. We are very proud of the achievement we have in District 30. We were beginning to close the gap, and we had the evidence to show that. So we have taken on a program called the Learning Gap. We are going to still continue right now. First, we have to figure out all this programming. Then we have to figure out where our children are socially and emotionally, making sure that they're okay. And then we're hoping by mid-October that we can assess them and then begin our educational program. So we have asked for all of these teachers. We've gotten some teachers. We're just waiting for more now to see what the next step is.
Good luck. 543 teachers is 25% of the 2,000 the mayor said he had available for the entire city.
Yes, I heard that. I said they belong to District 30. That's right. The other piece here, always being honest. Do we have these teachers?
Yeah.
You know, are these licensed teachers out there in special education speaking Spanish for our dual language children? Do we have them? Our L teachers, we're short them to begin with. So that's really my concern, to get these teachers in place.
So
thank you.
I have another quick question for Katie. Is there guidance for families who are returning from travels to states with mandatory quarantine? Is DOE tracking in concert with the state?
The guidance is if you are in, if you come coming from a state where the state, New York State currently says you are in mandatory quarantine, please quarantine for 14 days. That was something, as I mentioned, I did our division's regional enrichment center work a lot, and that's something that we had to deal with a stunning amount, I would say. People really wanted to come back, and we had to be like, well, you were just in Florida, you can't, you have to wait. There's the infection right there is so high. So yes, you should be quarantining for 14 days. I'll add that out of an abundance of caution. That's also true for international travel as well.
Great. Do we have anyone else who would like to raise their hand, ask a question of Katie? And then if not, Gail, do you want to check on the phone and in the interpreter line, on the interpreter line?
Okay, so the first number ends in 9235.
You have a question for Katie from the Office of Health and Wellness?
Hello?
Okay, maybe the next one.
Okay, next number is ends with 2146.
Hi, do you have a question?
¿Tiene una pregunta?
I asked them to unmute, so I guess not.
Okay. Then, and unless the council has any other questions or comments, I'm going to thank Katie so much for being here.
Do you
here.
Want to ask the interpreters first?
Oh, I thought that he did.
Oh, sorry, I missed that.
Okay. Cesar.
I guess.
No? Okay.
Una pregunta en la línea español. ¿Preguntas?
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Katie, thank you so much for being here. Is there what contact information would you like us to provide for folks for your office or you, or if they want to ask questions another time?
I can put my email in the chat only because, as Deb mentioned earlier, it's a very difficult name. So I always prefer to put it in writing for people. Happy to answer any questions further, and I want to really thank you for having me tonight. I've worked with District 30 for a long time, have a soft spot, and I just really want to say it really made me happy to hear the parents say earlier that she has the trust in her principal to go to blended learning for that reason. I know that parents are in a tough position and doing the best that they can, and that we need to make sure that we build that up as well. So I want to just thank you all for having me again tonight.
Don't leave yet, Katie. We have another hand raised.
Oh, great.
R. Frost, R. Forst, you are unmuted. R. Forst.
It's Robin from Council Member Danny Drum's office.
Great. Hi. Robin, you're good to go if you wanna talk. Maybe later.
Okay.
Thank you so much for taking time, Katie. Thank LaShawn and your office for what you're doing. Again, you are sort of the unsung heroes. We don't know what you're doing, but it's coming through, and so we appreciate you.
Yeah, and I definitely want more people to be aware, so please, I'm happy to follow up and answer questions. I work for a great boss and a great team who are doing, I think, very important work, and I want people to know how much they care about kids and how dedicated they are to that support. So thanks very much for having me.
Thank you, Katie. Take care.
Bye, Katie.
Bye, Dr. Capasto.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have our superintendent's report. So I'm going to throw it back to Dr. Compasto.
I was just going to mute. Okay, so good evening, everybody, again. So glad to be here with all of you. So just some information as we go along here. So as you know, we opened up our schools. Our staff reported on September 8th, and just that you should know that we do have five schools that had reported COVID-19 cases with staff members at this point. We are bringing our children back starting tomorrow virtually. We have 3 days with them, 16th, 17th, and 18th. We'll be viewing virtually. And then on Monday the 21st will be our first day of live. So we're really excited about this. We've been doing some really wonderful things. The 16th, 17th, and 18th, our teachers and principals will be getting acquainted with our children and with our staff. They'll be doing social emotional pieces. They'll be just doing some orientation so they know exactly what we're doing. You know, we're trying to make this as normal as possible. And this time of the year, we meet with our parents and our students. So we go through the curriculum and sort of talk about what the children will be learning, some of the projects they'll be working on and so forth. So we are excited about that. You all know that the new calendar, everybody was looking for the Board of Ed calendar. It finally is out. I have it in the notes for you. So we do have our calendar, which is an important piece for us. You had asked me just to go back about this blended and remote learning, how many percent of children are blended and remote. And I deliberately gave it a week and did it again to show you. What we're noticing is parents are moving to remote. Each and every day, parents are moving to remote learning. And if you go back to the beginning of September, we were heavy with the blended learning. But as time goes on, parents are moving back into the remote learning for whatever reasons. I'm happy to announce that we have the following schools have been awarded the honorable distinction as Respect for All School. All school winners for the school year 2020 out to serve as exemplary models for all schools in the city. These schools are PS 11, PS 70, PS 85, PS 92, PS 234, and PS 280. So I congratulate all those schools who've done a wonderful job. Thank you. And are recognized citywide for their greatness. Capping. So I did whole piece for you in this capping. I just want you to know, as CEC members, as community members, you have a right to know about capping. Capping is when a school is full and you go to register your child and you are a zone parent and you go to the school and they say, I'm sorry, grade 3 is capped. We no longer have any space. Then we work with the borough office and we find a school close to that parent's home. And we do provide busing, by the way, for the parent as well. But at this time, I am happy and proud to say we do not have a capping issue. So just to let you know that what capping is about, it's in detail. Just want to make sure that everybody knows each and every year we begin. These are the pieces that are normal for us. Normally, if this was a normal year and everybody was coming into District 30, we then start to cap. Unfortunately, you should all know our registrations are dropping. Yes, we have had very low registration this year, which is not good for us, because it's money for our children, because what happens is less children, less money. We start accessing teachers and the whole thing starts and it's not good for us. So we're going to hold our own. We have wonderful, wonderful principals, assistant principals, great teachers who really work well with us. We have a great working relationship. We have a community here that care about our children. And so we're going to do this. It's not an easy lift. I'm going to tell you something. These last 2 weeks have been very, very difficult. I am honored and privileged to have worked with the teachers and the principals and the administration, parent coordinators, safety officers. I see our kitchen people are out there doing the right thing. We have a wonderful, wonderful group of people who care about our children. I was going to talk a little bit about the room, but of course, Katie did that, which was wonderful. The room that we have, it just started, by the way. So far, today was our first day. We've had a few good things happening there. There is a COVID-19 school health policy. I do want everybody to have the opportunity. This policy provides guidance for schools regarding thresholds for schools opening and closing during the COVID-19, which means basically if we have two children in two separate classes, we then will close the school for 24 hours. They'll do a deep clean and then test and trace will jump in and figure it out. And we can open up right away. It all depends on what test and trace has to say to do that. We will be doing daily health screening for students and school-based staff. The establishment of an isolation room is basically the room where if a young man or even a staff member gets sick during the day, we're going to isolate them until we can get in touch with the parent, or if the staff member can't go home themselves, we can get a family member to pick them up. So we talked a little bit about the room, the COVID-19 testing scenarios for staff. So as you saw, we're waiting for guidance. You know, we are going to be doing some kind of testing, but waiting for guidance. Ventilation in our building. So all of our school buildings have been tested. 222 was the only school in the district that we closed down because 60% of the ventilation was not working. It is up and running. It's just a matter of a couple of motors. It was one of those newer schools that had all this ventilation, you know, rather than window opening. They had a lot of that. A lot of our schools have, the newer schools have these ventilation systems, but we're up and running in all of our schools. If you are interested in finding out about your school's ventilation system, you can go on the school website and you can look it up and they'll tell you exactly about the school ventilation system. Our regional enrichment centers, what I call the rec centers, close on September 11th, Friday. And they were truly wonderful. I'm telling you, when I visited them, you had to see everybody. You wouldn't know that we were in a pandemic. The kids were playing. I went into an art room. They were doing art. We went into the schoolyard. They were playing. And so all good things were happening there anyway. I do want to let our parents know that the PEBT cards will be coming out again. The parent and guardians of an eligible children who did not receive their PEBT food benefits on a SNAP TA cash or Medicare card will receive a PEBT food benefits card in the mail. A card will be sent for each eligible child by the end of September. So if you do not get this card by the end of September, you can call the district and ask for our family advocate, and they will also help you do it. In addition, I did put some directions in the minutes there that you can do if you want to. Meal update, want to catch you up on the meals. Meals can be picked up at all meal hubs from 7:30 to 1:30 Monday through Friday. Meal hubs will operate for children and families from 7:30 a.m. to 11:30 and from 11:30 to 1:30. No one will be turned away. All adults and children can pick up multiple meals at one time. Vegetarians and halal options are available at all sites as well. So September 21st and beyond, students learning in person will receive both breakfast and lunch in school. They will be grab and go. If you are a remote child, your family or yourself can come to the school, doesn't have to be the student, and we will give you a grab and go breakfast and lunch. That will not be open for the community in general, but as long as your child goes to our school, then they can come in for a breakfast or a lunch, and it doesn't have to be them. A family member can do that as well. So as you know, our principals returned on August 31st, and I'll share a quick story we have such dedicated people. We have a great, great group of people. Our teachers and staff are wonderful. Our principals work well together. So we had one of our BRT teams which is a building response team, which consisted of the principal, the assistant principal, five teachers, a guidance counselor, and a parent coordinator. And they worked all week from Monday to Friday, putting up the signs in the hallways this way, that way, making sure that every desk was in the right spot, did a wonderful job in the school. Friday, one of the members got tested and had the COVID. So that entire team has been out the entire week. They will return on September 21st. The first day I jumped in and got to be the principal for the first day. I've been back a couple of times since then. We have an assistant principal running the school for us. But what I'm so impressed is that each day I call to check up, and when I spent the day there, the teachers took right over. They did not need that principal or assistant principal. They knew their responsibilities. They met in a team. They're working so hard for our kids. Last I was there, they were doing videos for our kids, health videos, how to stay healthy, how to wash your hands and all that good stuff. So good things are happening, but we are in this pandemic. And as we've seen in the last week or so, things do happen. Resources. So we know that the begins on the registration of students. So beginning since last March, Family Welcome Centers began processing enrollment inquiries and registration remotely. This practice will continue until further notice. Each one of our borough centers, you can call them. In the event, and this has happened, please feel free to call the district, and our district family advocate will make sure that the Office of Student Enrollment gets in touch with you and works with you. Please do not be frustrated. Call the district and we will help you. So guidance on outdoor learning, I did give that to you, and I know a few of the members have asked me. I know of two or three principals who did apply. Basically, I'm going to be so honest with you that every principal, when we talk about it, they are focused. They are laser sharp on getting this program together. We need to know that our children on that very first day are going to feel welcomed and a part of the system. So that's where we have concentrated many of the principals. We'll go back once we get school leadership teams going again and talk about it, and we'll apply for outdoor learning. But what I hear from most of our principals, and they have talked to some of their school leadership teams, that they would prefer to do the things in the schoolyard rather than out in the street for different various reasons, whether with safety or whatever. So we will continue to monitor that, and we do not force people to do things in District 30. We're not lockstep. Everybody does the same thing. We are community. And each and every community through their school leadership decides what's right for them and how their school operates. There's a new piece called the Principal Playbook, and you can look at this if you would like as a parent. It is online. The DOE has provided school officials with a Principal Playbook, or Standard Operating Procedure Manual, as it's called. This is to provide principals with guidance on approval policies and all topics related to school reopening for the 2021 school year. And I must tell you, they put that out 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's changing. As every day, we're getting new direction. Every day, we're getting more guidance. We're learning more. You know what I contribute to? Something like we're writing a book, and we keep rewriting it. You know, things happen, and we rewrite the script. Learning bridges, as Katie did speak about, the only thing that I wanted to add to that is that for students in grades 3K through 8, who are participating in blended learning, Learning Bridges is a new program that will provide free childcare options on the days when students are scheduled for remote learning instruction. This is not for children that are fully remote, and they did have some criteria. I'm not gonna read all this to you, but I'm just gonna give you the highlights. So the criteria for Learning Bridges are families in temporary housing. This will put a smile on our teachers' faces. Children of New York City Department of Education school and program staff, including staff of Learning Bridges, families residing in NYCHA, children in family foster care, students with disabilities, children whose parents or guardians is an essential worker. So the Learning Bridges we have not received any locations, but you can go on the Department of Education's website and you can fill out a form so that you are ready to go when they figure out where these sites are going to be. They've been looking in public spaces such as libraries and any other space. And I know they're even considering now using our schools. So we have to see how this all plays out, but we are going to have a Learning Bridges program. our after school programs. We are going to have them. They're up and running, sort of. I have to be honest, we are in conversations. We're concerned. As principals, we are concerned. We spend our entire day social distancing, and then we have these community-based organizations who want to come into our schools, as they always do, and it was always fine because they're more of recreation. So kids are running and playing and jumping and going from room to room, using this, using that. So we are working very closely with them before we start these programs because we want to ensure that our children, whether they're with us or these community-based organizations, that they are safe. But the good news is that we are going to have a after-school programs for our children. So we are looking for always teaching placements. As you know, student teaching is an important piece. So one of the things that we have done is hook up with three or four different colleges, and we're getting student teachers into our schools. A little different, once again, because it was different when we were in a classroom. A teacher could watch the student teacher working with a child on the side. We are uncomfortable putting student teachers in these chat rooms without us. So we're figuring that out, what we can do with that as well. The guidance on iPads, I know people are asking about iPads. As previously noted in the July 20th, the Principal Digest, families can use the DOE remote learning device request form to notify schools of their technology needs. Schools can manage device requests from families using the centrally available iPad inventory. And I'm always honest, I know that we have had many parents calling us and say they have not received their iPad, including my daughter who called today. She's not in our district, but in her district, she didn't get her iPad either, and she wants to know where is it. So we are doing a trace and trying to figure out where these iPads are, but please still go online and fill out your request if you need an iPad or a device. So I just want to also add extended services for our children who are 21 plus. I'm really happy to say this. The DOE is offering an extension of services to students with IEPs who turned 21 years or older during the 2019-20 school year, age out of the school system in August. They will have the opportunity to have a program because of the virus, which is a good thing. We encourage all of our families to create a New York City school account and uptake contact information. With the start of the school year, school officials and staff should encourage parents, guardians, to create a New York City schools account in order to view their students' attendance, report card grades, transportation information, reading level, assessment scores, and progress towards graduation for high school students. And the last thing that I wanna, and of course, then I put the calendar in there for those who didn't wanna have it. But I do wanna add about our Office of Pupil Transportation. We did discover today we have a little bit of a glitch. They used last year's start and end time for our schools. So we have notified them today. The principals notified me first thing this morning. Over the weekend, many parents called them up. So it's just to show you what kind of, we're working on the weekends here. But the good news is that we have informed the Office of Pupil Transportation, but I do want parents to know that there was a glitch, and hopefully you're going to hear from the Office of Pupil Transportation and with a new schedule for your child as far as time-wise. So that's what we're up to, and that's my report, and I always want to thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Composto. I'd want to let everybody know you referred to the documents. We will post them on our website, so you are able to see the things to which Dr. Composto was referring. He gives us a really awesome detailed report, and we make it public for you. So as soon as we can get it up on our website, we will. I want to just to for some housekeeping, there's no public comment after the superintendent's report. Comments and questions geared towards Dr. Composto from the public will come during our public session, but we do open the floor to our council members to discuss the superintendent's report with him. I want to try something a slightly different format-wise. We tend to pick a member and then we give him all our questions, and I feel like it might be easier if we give everyone a turn first and then we can go back for seconds and thirds, but maybe we ask him one question at a time from each member and see how that goes. So who would like to go first if anyone has a question for Dr. Composto?
Oh, thank you. I see my report was so thorough. Everybody have a good evening. Just kidding, go ahead.
All right, well, I'll go. Okay.
A quick question. It's not on the report, but you mentioned at the beginning that you had a meeting with the principals. Did you have to talk anybody off any ledges? What was the basis of the mindset?
One of the things I wrote on the letter this evening, thanking them, they are troopers. We are together in this together. And one of the things that was the best part, and I'll be honest with you, I always insist on professional learning at each one of our meetings. That's how we get so good in District 30. But today I allowed them to ask questions. But at the last minute I said, it's not about griping, it's about helping us. So what principals did was share strategies, how they're programming, what they're doing. I've gotten about 10 emails just saying, thanks for that, I needed that. Because it gave everybody a glimmer of hope. Because let me tell you, this is difficult. I am not going to lie to you. I have spent myself 2 weeks with just going back and forth trying to figure this out. Because we are used to a very smooth opening, and we still want that for our children. So I'm proud of our principals because they're sticking together. And we did something different this year. Starting March, we have put our APs and principals together. Because in that large room, the answer lies. And we have been getting the answers out of that room. It's so smart how people are sharing such creative ideas on how to solve these problems.
That sounds awesome. I will ask you just for a clarification on these 3 days, 16th, 17th, and 18th. I heard from a parent today, not at one of my schools, another school, who was told that they had to pick one of the 3 days to come in virtually, as opposed to coming in all three. My understanding was that the hour was going to be for all 3 days.
That is correct. And you will whisper in my ear later
what
school that is, and we'll make sure that happens.
Thank you. Next member. Who would like to go?
Jonathan.
I totally understand how busy principals have been and how difficult this is, and why, it's applying for the outdoor learning is not at the top of their agenda. But it does seem weird. It was reported in the news that 800 schools across the city got approved for outdoor learning. And you're saying it was only a few in District 30,
So I must be always honest. I asked for a report today. A few have spoken to me about it. Like I'm going to say to you, each time the principals talk to me, they have other issues on their concerns. But three or four schools did tell me that. I did ask for a report. Matter of fact, just before I got on here, I wrote to the person. I said, you promised me the report. He apologized. They have not compiled it from Central yet. But understand something. We have many of our schools that have large schoolyards. And in talking with the SLTs, and I agree, it's safer to keep them in these contained spots. The idea of these large spaces will give us the opportunity for lots of things, such as if you have a band, we can be able to play our band. We will be able to do physical education outside. But once again, everything has to be done slowly and smart. We need our children to keep their masks on. We need them to keep social distancing. We have to keep reminding them to wash their hands. So there's a lot of pieces here. So I'm not as concerned. I am really happy to say that it's been a good piece for us, because many of the principals have talked about how they're using their schoolyards, even for some that will be using it for our pre-Ks and Ks coming in, just to be able to, the parents, because here's the other piece that we've been grappling with, that parents, when our kindergarten or pre-Ks cry, we let them walk up to the room and stay with them for a little while in the room. We can't do that. We can't do that anymore. So we are thinking of ways to make sure that our little guys feel welcome. So many are using their schoolyards for that. So it is, I'm not gonna say it's not on the top of my list, but if you can help me, PS69 put in for it, and matter of fact, for dismissal pieces, and they have not heard back yet. So we keep trying to push for that. I know someone from Danny's drum office asked me, and I said, we're hoping that you can help us, because we do want that piece. Because the other piece here is that you might have, for parents who've been in our schools for a while, sometimes we use only one exit. To help this, we will be using all exits around the entire building to social distance. So it's a whole different routine that we're going to have to create.
Who's next? Nula? Nothing? All right, then I've got another one. Just a clarification. I think everyone knows this, but I want to hear you say it. My understanding is snow days are a thing of the past. That when we, if and when we close for snow, kids will still be learning and it will be remote. Is that your understanding?
I didn't even hear that. I'm going to be so honest with you. We were so happy to get the calendar. So we didn't even talk about snow days. I did not hear that one way or the other.
That is what I've heard. I think maybe it came out with the calendar. I don't know. But we have time for that. It's still hot.
I will inquire. But that's the first time it came up. I'm going to be honest. I don't know. But okay. I'll find out. Let me write that down. When is snow days?
Because when I told my children, they were very upset. who else? Anyone? I think we're going to have, yes.
Deb, I don't know how to raise my hand, so I'm on my phone.
Just hop on in. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say thank you, Dr. Composto, and give a special thanks to all the kitchen staff who did a great job all summer long handing out all these meals. It was not an easy task, and they were just fabulous, and a big thank you to them.
Yes, I agree. Thank you, Nula.
Question.
Oh, go ahead, Chuck.
Okay. Sorry. Some parents were asking me where I had heard about tomorrow morning's kind of intro meeting with their teacher. So I think there's been inconsistent communication. If parents don't have an NYCSA account set up with kind of up-to-date contact information, where can they go to find this information? Is this the child's NYC email address the best way? Because in conversations with a few folks around, at least my building, my block, some were taken by surprise that tomorrow and not the 21st was the first day of school.
Yes. So they should call the school. They should absolutely call the school. They'll get hooked up right away. If they can't get through to school, they certainly call the district and we'll help them hook them up. But I would like for them to call the school because they have the contact and the parent coordinator will be able to give them their number and get them right on. It's not a problem. The problem is the communication piece. That's the problem, the communication.
So, I'll go again. Should principals be encouraging kids to get tested before they go in person?
We're not going to take that stand at this point. We're leaving this up to our families. As Katie said, there's a lot of feelings out there. There are a lot of feelings. We do not have a mandate to do that. So we're just working with our parents and working with each and every parent because everybody has a different opinion and we have to respect them and work with them. So as long as we do not have a mandate, we will not be asking anybody to do anything. But just, encouraging because they do want us all to be tested, especially the staff, including myself. So that's what we'll encourage, but we'll never, never make
it. That was all I was asking was, actively encouraging.
I don't think they're going to actively encourage students particularly, but that we're going to encourage, because that's what they ask, encourage all to be tested, staff and our children.
All right, I've got another one. It was came in through the Q&A, but it's a rather than wait, it's an anonymous person, so I don't think they want to ask it in the public session. Two questions. First, can a parent go to the nearest school for food if they don't go to school in the neighborhood?
So right now they can because there's still the food hubs are still open. But once they close down, we will provide school only food, breakfast and lunch for those children in our building. But right now the hubs are still open.
Got it. Okay, and then we touched on this a little bit. Obviously, we need all this staff. We put in for all this staff, and we don't have it, which is leaving a lot of schools without staff for remote days. There's obviously 6 whole days left, so who knows? But what's the contingency? There are kids who will be going into blended 4 out of 5 days a week. Is the contingency, honestly, is it they're going to get their assignments and maybe a tape lesson or, what's the contingency plan for not getting that staff?
Well, so this is what we heard today. This was a new guidance that came in today. Not sure who's going to do it, because that was my question. So our young people who are getting synchronous learning, which are in school learning, those 2, 3, 5 days, it all depends on your school and your schedule. For their remote, at this point, it could be synchronous because of the fact that we're not sure what's this whole teacher piece. That's what, there's a big puzzle here. Let me always be transparent. We have two things happening to us. One, we have our young people, our students, who are going from live to remote at this point. We have our teachers putting in accommodations. Each and every day, both of those numbers are growing. They're growing. So until the first day, it's a puzzle, because we need to make sure that we have a teacher in front of all of our children. So, you know, I might be counting on teacher A, and then tomorrow we get an accommodation that they have an accommodation and they'll no longer be in person. So those are the pieces that are worrying us, that it's an unknown thing, and it's ongoing, because anybody has a right to put in a medical accommodation whenever. It could be 3 days into school, they have a right to put in an accommodation. So that's the job for us right now, to figure out who are our teachers, who are our children, and how do we match them up.
Well, you started to talk about the guidance that came out today. So is the point they could be synchronous or it could be not on the remote blended day?
They're going to get something, right? At the very least, they're going to get asynchronous. But they should be getting synchronous too. It all depends on this whole piece in the next couple of days, to seeing what teachers we receive from Central. That'll help us. Next time I'll be able to answer that question better, because like I said, schools have received teachers, a few here and there, you know, trickling in, but we have not received the bulk of that 543 teachers. So we have to see how this is going to play out for us.
So District 30 has received some.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And asynchronous, just to define it, could be a recorded lesson. It could be a Google Classroom assignment. It's engagement, just not live.
Right. Correct. It's not with a teacher live, but it is an assignment.
Okay. That's
so,
for me.
So I just, all of that we were just talking about, that you were just talking about, was about the remote part of blended learning. Does all of that also apply to the 100% remote students?
No, so that's different. So we have three pieces here. You have 100% remote, they will have their teachers. Then we have the live children, and then it's called the remote, it's a blended model where those teachers will do the remote for the children that are live. So there's three pieces here. You have the remote, the remote live, and just the live piece. Am I clear? In other words, so I'm a student. You're my teacher. I'm going to be live with you 3 days this week. The other 2 days, another teacher will be working with you. Or your teacher might throw some asynchronous work up there and you'll be working with that. We're looking at this flip model. Flip model is very interesting pieces. We give our children like research, we give them readings, we give them videos, and then when they come back, we work with that. In other words, we prep them, they sort of prep themselves for the lesson, which is a nice model. That's what we've been training our teachers with.
To your knowledge, my understanding anecdotally is that we have two out of the three pieces. We have the majority of the in-person staffed, and we have a large majority of the fully remote staffed. It's the that blended remote piece that is warranting all the 543.
Correct.
But I just want to verify that with you. If you are 100% fully remote, the expectation is you will have a teacher tomorrow.
Yes, you will. Okay. So I want to be always honest with even our remote and even our live. We're fighting right now. We have bodies. Your children will certainly have teachers, certified teachers, but our goal is to have the right certified teacher, so that if you're having a math lesson in middle school, we want a math teacher to teach you, not the science teacher, not the ELA teacher. And so if you're a special ed youngster, we need to have a licensed special ed teacher in front of you. If you are an L student, you have a right to have an L in front of you. And then we have this wonderful dual language program that we really are desperate to maintain, because it's really thriving in our district. So Some teachers might be needed for remote. In other words, we have teachers for the remote, but are they the right teachers as far as licensing? So we're just trying to work all of this out now.
Thank you.
I have one last question on another topic, which is the learning bridges. You said something which I want to verify that I heard it correctly, which is that the learning bridges is only for the blended students.
Is correct. It's not for remote only. It's not for remote only. So it does say that in our guidance. Go ahead.
So what is the city or the DOE doing for childcare for remote learning? I think that there was a kind of assumption that those students who are most in need would choose blended. And I think we've seen now that that assumption is not necessarily true.
Yeah.
Many of those students come from communities that were really hard hit and do not want to go into the school buildings. And many of those students, all the same, need childcare. I'm sure you don't know the answer to this, but this is a question for you or for anybody else or for, you know.
I'll escalate it. Give me your question, I'll escalate it up.
I think that there are two assumptions. You're the first one, you're absolutely right. And that the assumption was also, if you're keeping your child home full time, you can. You have the ability to do so. So you don't, therefore you don't need childcare. And both of those assumptions are completely wrong. And there is, the answer to your question is absolutely nothing is being done if you are fully remote.
I will escalate that question though.
Anybody else questions for Dr. Composto? We have him for the rest of the evening. So if we want to move on from the report, we can go on to our next agenda item, which is resolution 146. That is a resolution that Jonathan has put forward with a couple of co-sponsors. And Jonathan, if you want to speak to it before we read it into the record, or you want to read it and then speak to it, or have Shannon read it, however you want to proceed. And just for everyone else, we will have public speaking. Public agenda comes right after this part. So if you would like to participate, just hang on for this last agenda item, and then we will have public speaking. Jonathan, do you want to speak to it first? Or?
I'll read it unless Shannon would prefer to.
Your call, Shannon. Since Jonathan wrote it, I figured he could read it if he likes.
I think Shannon is either muted or not.
Oh, she's busy. Go ahead and read it, Jonathan. That's
okay. Fine. Okay, sure. The community resolution to demand expanded access to internet services for all New York City families. The Community Education Council of District 30, CEC 30, is a group of parents and community members who have been elected or appointed to serve Astoria, Corona, East Elmhurst, Jackson Heights, Long Island City, Sunnyside, Woodside, and beyond, representing thousands of public school students and their families. This resolution joins together councils across New York City to demand our elected officials address the significant need for expanded access to affordable internet service for families enrolled in both blended and remote learning this year. Whereas the New York City Department of Education closed its school buildings as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic on March 16th, 2020. Whereas all public schools were required to transition to remote learning for the remainder of the school year 2019 to 2020. Whereas the City of New York negotiated free internet access through the end of the school year 2019 to 2020 for families who needed an internet connection, and the DOE provided free internet-enabled iPads to families in need of devices. Whereas some internet providers required families to subscribe long-term for temporarily free internet, putting families at risk of receiving invoices after the free period unless families take the initiative to cancel. Whereas even though the City of New York and the DOE took measures to close the digital divide, thousands of students struggled to participate in remote learning meaningfully for digital technology-related reasons, such as insufficient bandwidth, unstable connections, and delays to service initiation. Whereas regardless of whether students are participating in a blended learning plan or a fully remote learning plan for the school year 2020 to 2021, most District 30 students will spend the majority of their school time remotely, and every student will be required to participate in remote learning. Whereas regardless of the reopening plan, caregivers of public school students will continue to receive necessary communication from school and central DOE via digital means, requiring these caregivers to have access to reliable internet connection for essential and critical information related to their children's education. Whereas internet connectivity is an essential service, much like electricity and water, and should be available to all as a public utility. Whereas in January 2020, the City of New York released the New York City Internet Master Plan, which promises to deliver universal high-speed broadband to all New Yorkers. Therefore, be it resolved that the City of New York should expedite the implementation of the New York City Internet Master Plan. And be it resolved that the City of New York should prioritize installation of high-speed broadband infrastructure in public housing and in neighborhoods whose median wealth is below the citywide median wealth. And be it further resolved that the DOE should renegotiate free internet subscriptions with internet and cellular service providers for the entirety of the school year 2020 to 2021, including the summer of 2021, regardless of the possibility of full school reopening in spring 2021.
Thank you. Do you wanna talk about it? I think it's a great resolution, so.
I don't.
It's fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory. Maybe I'll just add to it, and I don't think it's necessary to put it in the resolution, but the necessity for expanded and affordable internet service goes well beyond remote learning and COVID. This should be a necessity for all New Yorkers and all citizens, you know, regardless. So I think that we can, you know, I hope that we can pass this, and I hope that whatever the city does is permanent, you know, is permanently a service for our students.
Does anyone else want to speak to this resolution? Questions for Jonathan or about the resolution?
I just had a clarifying question. I'm not super familiar with the master plan that was announced in January. What is the mechanism by which they'll create this kind of universal internet access? Is it kind of bulk purchasing accounts and then kind of distributing them to low-income families? Or is it like a voucher or a subsidy for families to procure that themselves, you know, by choosing the provider that's best for them? Or,
you know, I have read through the master plan quickly, but I can't pretend to know all of what it says. There are some public-private partnerships involved in the master plan. I guess my point of view is that I don't feel like in our position we need to get into the details, but that we are in a position to demand that the city provide, you know, reliable and sufficient internet access.
Yeah, I think it's a great resolution, and it's absolutely a necessity, whether just for because of COVID or even, you know, COVID notwithstanding. Yeah.
Especially now that we're seeing what we can do, like snow days and emergencies. Yeah.
I'm sorry. So with that being said, so funny, with all that's going on, we're forward thinking in District 30. What a wonderful thing. Think about this. We have many of our children that go back to their countries for a month, you know, and lose a month worth of learning. We can help them now. Our children who stay home for whatever reasons, we can help them. There's something good that's going to come out of all of this. And I think the fact that we just have to break through this remote. And Deborah, as you were talking, I looked it up. And you are correct. It says in the, and I'll send it to all you, Deborah, and you can put it out there. Snow days. Any students attending that day cannot be delivered in person. due to inclement weather will become a fully remote instructional day. So you are absolutely right, and I will send that to you. I just looked it up on, it just came out, believe it or not.
Kids all across District 30 just went like
But, you know, but it's a good thing. Think about it. You know, like, we lose a lot of time with children. Like, a lot of our children sometimes, they don't do well because they don't come to school. They don't come to school because maybe they don't feel good, or maybe they have to stay home and take care of grandma, or they have to take care of their brother or sister. So now they'll have the opportunity to learn. They go to their country. They can learn. So I think this, once the dust settles with all of this, we can use this. We can use this to make a better educational system, a stronger one. So I certainly think that's a great resolution.
So long as it doesn't mean, so long as it means that we still keep all of our teachers and in fact are able to hire more, because sometimes when you get into the topic of, you know, online learning,
digital technology,
there are people driving that who want to save money by firing teachers. So
by having robot teachers.
No, I would hope not. I would hope not. Listen, there's nothing like live instruction. I can tell you from March until now, this is good, but there's nothing like live instruction for our children.
So I will then make a motion to adopt resolution 156. 156, is that what we're doing? I lost my number.
146.
146, sorry.
Do we want to allow people to...
Oh, sorry, we have a public speaking to the resolution. I'm sorry, I skipped, I forgot. We have the two sessions already, yes. So members of the public, thank you, Jonathan. If you would like to speak to this resolution, please raise your hand now. We will call on Zoom room hand raisers first, and then we can go to the phone and the interpretation room. Would anyone like to speak to this resolution, for or against? Nobody's raising their hand. Okay, I take that as a good sign. Okay, so then I will make a motion to adopt resolution 146. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Bob? And then we will do a roll call vote. Shannon, are you able to do a roll call vote?
Yes. Ready? Yes. Ms. Deborah Alexander?
In favor?
Mr. Roberto Cruz?
I think it's timely and necessary. In favor.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg?
In favor.
Ms. Katrina Harris?
In favor.
Ms. Fatima Lacari?
In favor.
Thank you. Myself, Shannon Lee, in favor. Ms. Amina Mazia?
In favor.
Thank you. Ms. Danny Moore?
In favor.
Thank you. Ms. Nula Odorchi?
In favor.
And Mr. Chuck Park?
In favor, and very proud to cast my first vote in favor of this awesome resolution.
Thank you. And Mr. Scott Sharon?
In favor.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Resolution passes unanimously. Thank you for writing it, Jonathan, and suggesting it.
Let me just add that I wrote this in conjunction with some CEC members from around the city, and there are other CECs who have passed and are looking at passing similar resolutions. So, you know, we have strength in numbers.
And one thing I brought up at the last PEP meeting that has gained a little traction, hopefully, is that the resolutions that we do send really warrant some sort of feedback. There's a new parent member on the PEP, the Panel for Educational Policy, who I'm in contact with, and he is working on a process by which that can happen, that fosters more communication on resolutions and everything, but specifically on resolutions, so that they don't just go into the ether and are never heard from again. They're not easy to write. They take time and research, and it's not fair that they don't respond to them. So hopefully we will get some. And to your point, the more there are, the more important they're going to be. So I look forward to them responding. Now we can head into our final public session. We can have members of the public are able to speak for 2 minutes on any topic you like. Megan Cerrito has had her virtual hand raised for quite a while, so I'm going to call on her first, and you are good to go, Megan.
Hi, thank you. I'm actually here wearing my hat as not a parent, but as a staff person for Assemblywoman Kathy Nolan. I just wanted to know, because we're hearing from principals and other staff that they don't have enough devices and they are going to have to use their own budgets to provide devices for students. And there's a lot of concern that we're hearing. So, you know, what I'd like to know is which schools can't cover all the need, number one, and number two, you know, how can PTAs or other, what are other avenues for fundraising to make sure that we can get these, all students a device?
Dr.
Capasta? Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to try to unmute. Yeah. So hard to find that button. So, you know what? Thank you for asking that question. And I've been working on that question. For those who know, we have New York City, New York Kids Rise, who's given over $1 million to our children for their college funds. So I met with her on Friday and asked if she could help. I'm asking if she can help us find some money. We do need money for these devices. You're absolutely right. And the other piece for me is that I'm concerned about that a lot of our children walked with these devices, and I asked our principals to give away their laptops to the children. It was an emergency in March, so we don't have any equipment in the buildings as well. So we need to get to our local politicians. We need these RESOA money. We need PTAs to raise money, whatever we need to do, but you're right. We need to get the money for these devices, because I don't know of any school that has a surplus of money to buy devices at this point. I really don't. We are really working hard to just get our teachers in place. So our money has been going to staffing. So I agree with you, and I welcome the help. I will work with anybody who has an idea. Like I said, I just happened to call over to New York Kids Rise because I felt like they have helped us, and hopefully they're going to help us again. But if you know something, you need my assistance, whatever, we can work as a team. You're right. We do need to get the money for this equipment for our children.
Yeah, I think that was a great idea, New York Kids Rise. Deborah Ellen is really dynamic. And
Tag a team with me. I call her up tomorrow and say that I talked about it. We got to do this for the district. We need this.
I will. And help it. If there are other fundraising efforts, how can families and how can community members direct funds for that specific purpose? Is there a way, a mechanism to do that?
Well, absolutely. You know, we can work with schools individually. And, you know, if that's what we want to do, if we want to do a district fund, I will work with our finance department and set up some kind of a fund, how that would work, because there is certainly rules and regulations that we have to follow. But listen, I will figure all that out. If you get me some money and some funding, I promise you, I will figure out how to take it. You know, I guess the question is, do we want to do a district fund? Do we want to do individual funds? You let me know, and you've got my full support on this.
So one thing we don't know yet is PTA guidance. We are in a constant state of awaiting PTA guidance. So once we get that hopefully will help a little bit and get our PTAs off the ground. In addition, I think we could put out, the city has talked about turnkeying PTA funds. That's an idea. But my comment to this is that I think some schools don't necessarily know what their count is yet. I know our school was, yesterday put out if you need a device, here's the survey. So they might not know how many they have and how many they need. And if there are any schools who have excess devices, can they then lend them out or give them to a school that is in need of a device? Do we know if there is any school in that has excess?
So here, I'm going to say absolutely not to that. But here's our next problem, that the principals have to sign an attestation that if they have any computers left in their building, you know, not the laptops or devices such as the iPads, they have to give them out to children. So they have to sign something saying whatever they have left, they're going to give away. So, because that's what started this whole conversation with Deborah Ellen, because the principal said, we can't give everything away. We need them for the in-house. You know, their thought is the children are going to come back and forth with them. But there's a lot of concern with children carrying devices back and forth on buses and stuff. So we are really eager to figure this out. So I am so happy, Megan, that you said that. And I will work with you or anybody out there who's willing to write a grant. Help me figure this out. But we do need it. Listen, we're going into this whole blended model, right? And now we don't have any computers. We've got to figure this out. We do have to figure this out about devices. So I'm there for anybody who can figure this out. You know, I certainly think we should ask our wonderful politicians with the Reso-A, and we start that. Because over the years, we have put a laptop cart of 32 computers in every school in District 30, in every classroom. We have smart boards in every single room. We have really built our technology up and done wonderful things with learning with this. But in March, I demanded that the principals give up these iPads and their laptops, but I knew it was the right thing, and it is the right thing, but we also need them in school. We need help here. That is something we do need help with. And I'm in the process that you should know. I surveyed the principals today, asking them how many devices they have, how many devices they need, what can we do? And it was interesting. Some principals are coming back saying, we even need for our teachers. We need, you know, because I know even myself, I have this old laptop that I have not replaced in years because it was sort of a spare thing. Now it has become my main computer. And I think many people did stuff like that. So we do have to figure this out. And thank you for surfacing it, because I have too been thinking of this.
So I think if we could have, when you compile it, the data of who needs, of what the actual need is, we can then go from there. And perhaps obviously Kathy Nolan's office is asking. Danny Drum usually gives us a grant. We could go ask him for that purpose, or I don't know if he's allocated money for us again, but there are places we can go. I think we need to know what we're looking at. You know,
I will gladly share the survey. I just put it out today. Yeah. I've got 16 schools back, but I'm going to pursue this, I promise.
And then, I mean, I would think to ask the CEC as well. I don't know how, you know, because we're going to have a little bit of an excess budget this year because we're not having live meetings, and we did get the extra money, the $5,000. So if we could help bridge that gap as well, we could explore that too. But if we're talking $100,000, obviously, you know, so let's take it one step. But Megan, I would love to partner up with you on that once we see what we're looking at, for sure.
Yeah. I'm wonderful. When I spoke to Deborah Ellen, I said to her, can we get, first I started off with one cart per class per school, millions of dollars. Then we went to one cart for every grade in each school. And then we went down to one cart per school. This is like $1 million just to put, you know, one cart of 32 in each school is like $1 million. It's really, technology is so expensive. So we are gonna need to figure this out, but I am so happy. You have lifted something off my heart, because in forward thinking, we are right now worried about placement, we're worried about programs, we're worried about staff members. But in forward thinking, technology, we're in blended world. We need this technology. So thank you. Yes, I will share the survey with you, and I will work with anybody who wants to work with me.
We have a hand, Kathleen S.A. You are good to go.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. I really like the resolution 146. Thank you so much for passing that. I think it's excellent and really timely, and feel like it should have been here 5 years ago. But anyway, thank you. I also wanted to mention on the last topic that you were talking about with the laptops and the computers for students, I think that there are maybe parents that would be willing to pay or have their own computer, but would like the DOE configuration to limit certain access. And I don't know if that's something that the DOE or the school or District 30 could do, is help parents figure out how to appropriately program their laptops to really be limited so that their children don't go to other sites? Because I know for myself, that's a huge worry. And if I were to use one of the centers and send my child off with a device, I wouldn't want them to have a home computer that really has a bit more access than what probably the DOE would have.
I will certainly inquire. I think that's a very good ask, and we can probably do that. But I want to find out. But I think it's a good ask.
Okay. And then the other item is I really would like to see some more guidelines around technology use. I mean, the kids are being pushed to go on more technology more than ever, and there is a huge addictive factor to a lot of this technology. And I don't hear many dialogues or discussion points about that. And I would love to see some more parameters around appropriate time and usage and sites. And then the last thing, I just blanked on it, is around the privacy. I think that because of the way that things are right now with a lot of digital information, I do think that we should be remembering best practices on children's privacy, on their email accounts, on how to share data. I don't think I'm seeing enough, and I don't think the kids, especially elementary, first grade, second grade, even fourth grade, which are my children at 150, I don't feel that they are they have enough of an understanding of how, you know, how to safeguard their privacy.
So I certainly will speak to the principals about that. We can do classes for that. I hear you. We do some, but it's never enough.
I think especially now going and starting out the school year and maybe getting some new accounts. I have an email account. I can just go sign in here. And it may not be school related. It might be personal or someone, yeah. I just have to log in and give my email. I think that we really need to put some attention on this because there are a lot of really unfortunately awful people that are looking for our children.
I certainly will escalate those two questions or concerns.
So much, and thank you for all the hard work that you all have been doing. It has been a really challenging year for you all.
Certainly has, but we're doing it. We got a great team.
That is our SLT chair at PS150 who has also been putting in work all summer, working very, very hard. Our SLTs have actually done more than they bargained for when they've signed on their terms, as have everybody. But
I want to thank you too. Yes, we need our SLTs. That's what governs our schools. So thank you.
They've been working really hard all summer. But yeah, it's a really great point actually about assigning and curriculum because the kids are going to be on computers so much. Maybe we can really reinforce that on their own assignments are done off the computer as much as possible, you know, especially for the younger ones while the weather is warm, things that they can do outside. Things that they can do around the house. Definitely a really, really good point.
Yeah, so just so you know, and I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, but they did put out sample schedules for our children from pre-K to high school. And from pre-K was like 15, 20 minutes. High school was up to 2 hours. That's all they recommend. And they did it straight along. So it is something that we have to be smart about to make sure that, and as you said, sometimes our children go on to interesting sites that they shouldn't be at.
I have a question from the Q&A. How many kids are allowed to be in a remote class?
So it all depends on the room. So in our district, we have some as few as 7, and we have as much as 15. Now the 15 are usually in these double classrooms, like old shop rooms that were huge. It's all about square footage. What happened was the School Construction Authority gave us the measurement of each school and broke down for us the square footage and told us exactly how many children could fit in the room. So we have anywhere between 7 and 15, mostly 7 to 10 is our biggest amount of number.
And then what about remote? So for remote blended and then for fully remote, what is the class?
Okay, so at this point, remote, they can only go up to a contractual class size. So that might be different for certain schools. Some it might be 30, some it might be 32. Now, remote blended, they can get double the amount of children. And the idea here is that even though I'm the live teacher and I only have 7 children in my room, but there is 29 children in my class, the other 22 children are still my responsibility. You might have them 2 days a week, but I'm responsible to get in touch with the parent. I'm responsible to do the grading. I'm responsible for all of the for that child as whole. I'm the one who will be held accountable for that child, not the remote blended teacher. But they can have double, which is 64, depending. Could be 60 or 64.
Now, would that be at the same time, given the time guidelines that, you know, a blended day for a third grader is 85 minutes or so, and that teacher is responsible for 60 kids, I would assume then that they wouldn't be 60 at one time.
Because yes, it would be 60 at one time times five, because they teach five classes. Yes, it would be 60. That's our problem. We don't have enough teachers to do this. You're on mute. Oh.
My brain is on mute. that is crazy to me. Because a whole class blended remote only needs, you know, 85 minutes. So then there's a bunch of different, one teacher can teach, let's say, three groups of 30 or of 15 throughout the day. So that would be like three blended remotes classes per teacher.
Correct.
Why would they put 60 in at one for one 85 minute class?
Because they do that five times a day, because we need them to do the coverage for these young people who are not in school that day.
They're covering that many classes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay. I don't see any other hands. Does anyone else have anything they'd like? Oh, I do see a hand. Angelina Bonilla, you are unmuted.
Yes, hi. I have a question about the school. I've been for Pre-K Center Q397, I've been emailing the school and calling the school, but no one has picked up or responded to my email. And I have been to the building, but no one was there. And I want to know the meeting ID and password for Leonardo Bonilla.
So you're going to email me tonight or tomorrow, and I will take care of it. P Compos, C-O-M-P-O-S, stop at the S. P-C-O-M-P-O-S at schools with an S dot nyc.gov. You email me and you will have an answer tomorrow.
I put it in the chat and the Q&A as well.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Terrific. Okay, anybody else? I think we are good for now. I want to, before we adjourn, I just want to wish everybody good luck tomorrow. I think it's just gonna be every emotion. I think kids are gonna be so happy to see their friends and their teachers, and the teachers are gonna be so happy to see their kids, and everyone's gonna be anxious and excited at the same time. And it's gonna be messy, and we know that, and we'll get through it. And I'm grateful to have Dr. Composto at the helm. I'm grateful for our principals and our teachers.
Yes.
We are in a better position than most. First hurdle is tomorrow, and then we march onward to Monday, which will be another interesting day.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask if I can have a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Yes.
Second, Katrina. Amina. Great. Then all in favor, I assume we will all adjourn. Thank you everyone for attending. We are going to continue on with our business meeting. There is no public speaking in our business meeting, but you're welcome to stay and listen.
Can we release the interpreters? Yes, there is no one in the room.
Oh, no, there's no one in the interpretation room?
Not right now, right.
Then thank you to our interpreters. I hope I didn't speak too quickly. Okay.
Can we take 2 minutes?
Yes.
And come back?
Yes. We'll take 2 minutes.
Turn.
Folks need.
Thank you, good night.
Good night, thank you so much. You take it away, Rob, when you're ready.
You don't want to push through now?
Have you ever known me to want to stop talking? So I'm fine with whatever.
You're doing so excellently.
I'm happy to push through. All right, I think we're all back. As a reminder, we still have some attendees. I think we have to come back first. Okay, so I will call the CEC 30 September business meeting to order at 51 p.m. Shannon, will you please take the roll?
Sure. Ms. Deborah Alexander?
Present.
Mr. Roberto Cruz?
Present.
Mr. Jonathan Greenberg?
Present.
Ms. Katrina Harris?
Present.
Ms. Fatima Lakari?
Present.
Shannon, myself, present. Ms. Amina Mazia?
Present.
Ms. Danny Moore?
Present.
Ms. Nula O'Dortry?
Present.
Thank you. Mr. Chuck Park?
Present.
Thank you. Mr. Scott Sharon?
Present.
All right. Thank you so much. I will make a motion to dispense with the reading of the minutes from the August 11th, 2020 annual calendar. No, just calendar and business meeting, and accept them as presented. May I have a second, please?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor? Or I guess, should I say, is anyone opposed? All right, well, then we are unanimous. I want to compliment our new members. I thought you both did so well at your first calendar meeting. You guys, no one ever talks at their first meeting. I'm so excited to have you. You both did really, really well. Very impressive, and we're so happy to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for having us.
I'm very excited. Okay, so the first thing on our business meeting agenda is committee updates. So and for Danny and Chuck, we had voted to start a racial justice committee in the CEC that would be inclusive of our members as well as potentially community members. And as well as a facilitator to help us kind of get started. So I have been in contact with somebody who has been working with the DOE for the New York State Integration Project, Dr. Edward Fergus. And he is very happy to help us. He is just in the middle of some deadlines for a writing project. So we are in a bit of a holding pattern for him. I think we can still set a date to start, and if he can join us, great. But I think that we should put something on the books that we can give him perhaps in October. I don't know what everyone thinks, because we have our October is going to be a little bit busy with just school in general, but also we have two CEC commitments. We have our October 13th calendar meeting and then the October 22nd town hall with the chancellor. So it's going to be a bit of a busy month. In addition, the next item is the zoning update. And I think that needs to be a priority because PS 384 need some answers.
Chaos. The parents are in chaos.
Yeah. So we can sort of talk about these things together in terms of committees. But yes, PS 384, Danny is aware, but I don't know if Chuck, you're aware of the situation in Long Island City. The long and the short of it is Long Island City has been behind the eight ball for seats. A couple of years ago, they had 100 kid child wait list for kindergarten, which prompted action, and they started building two schools. One of those schools didn't really get off the ground yet. The other school got a goodly way forward, and then COVID hit, and the school has now, the construction has stopped. The concern that we're hearing is that the money might not be there, that they might have reallocated the money for the school. So we need to confirm that with the school construction authority. We need to know what their plan is, and we need to involve the community. So that's the brief 384 situation. Currently, the students at PS 384, we did what was called what we did at the pre-K center. It's called, when you open the school, but the school isn't open?
Satellite?
What?
Incubation.
Thank you. The incubation school. Oh my gosh. The incubator school. So they actually began the school. They got a principal, a PTA. They started the school at a temporary site in anticipation of the building opening in 3 years. That site is a pre-K center. We have kids who need pre-K seats. You know, it was only supposed to be a temporary situation. So we need to figure out what's happening. The school is slated to open a year from September. So from now. So that is a priority and we need to be discussing that. So the first thing we should do is put a zoning committee meeting on the books. Now I'm assuming, because Danny is a 384 parent, that she would be on the zoning committee.
Yes, please.
So, and Chuck, you're welcome to join as well.
Happy to, yeah, sure. I was going to ask about committee assignments, how those work, but I'd be happy to attend, yeah.
And we can talk about all that once we get into new business, liaison schools and committee assignments. But I'd like to get something on the books for a meeting. I don't know if we can do late September or if that's a little soon. Where's my calendar? What about?
It's just us, Deborah, or are we inviting 384? How does it work?
We can decide. I mean, I don't think us alone is particularly helpful. We need either us and the DOE, or we need us and the community. It's an open meeting. If we have a committee meeting, it is an open meeting, so anyone can come. I think that the best course of action is to have that zoning committee that's focused on 384. Invite the community to come discuss. We can ask if the DOE would be willing to come. They might be, or we can ask Dr. Composto to give our questions and they can give us the answers that we can then share out.
I think we should definitely involve the parents. They're all really over involved and put a lot into this building right here. It's right next door to me.
Yeah.
We can involve them and invite them. In some way, I think it might be worth it.
Yeah.
Just so we're not getting constantly asked the same question.
Yeah. So let me just ask, the last time that we talked about this was with the Department of District Planning, and they wanted us to get going. I mean, they thought, you know, we needed to start doing this. Has something changed since we talked to them, like with the building? Or like, is there less? No, we're in the same spot that we were in then. Okay, so just to update you, Danny and Chuck, we were also like in that conversation that we had with district planning, Dr. Composto also raised the possibility of using this opportunity to zone a much larger portion of Long Island City.
Right.
You know, so that would mean potentially inviting, you know, a larger swath of people than simply the parents at PS 384, who also 384 isn't even zoned, right? Like, so it's not necessarily parents who live. Is it parents? Just parents who live there?
It's mostly all parents except for we have two in Sunnyside so far.
Yeah, right. So anyway,
but I agree. I think we should invite the entire community.
Yeah, although I think right now, the concern is the school getting built, period, which is of concern given our larger plan. But but it is, we have Long Island City kids who, you know, who need physical seats somewhere. And right now we don't know where they're going to go in September. Can they still fit at the pre-K center next September? Will that building accommodate them? Or will the DOE look for another site? And then if they stay at Jackson Avenue, what happens to the pre-K kids who need seats? So it's a big domino effect. And we need to have a plan before we even think about zoning, because that school now is not looking like it's not going to be completed for next year.
We're up against two massive buildings next door that are on construction 7 days a week. They haven't stopped through the pandemic, and they're about 40 floors. And they're right between, it's my building and these two massive buildings that are 40 floors, and then the brand new school, which is gonna bring in like hundreds more people. So it's, and again, it'll slow down, but I think we're about to get bottlenecked, and it's kind of, people are gonna start kind of going at it.
So my suggestion is the week of October 5th, that should give enough time to, you know, any of those days, other than the 30th, it's my daughter's birthday. We can do something with, and I would like to invite SCA and district planning, Kathy Nolan's office, all of the electeds, you know, say this is the Court Square Civic Association and Gantry and all of the parent organizations everywhere is fine. But it'll be focused on PS 384, and it'll be a zoning committee meeting, but with the focus of 384. How does that week look? Are there any major conflicts that jump out in that week that would be bad?
I'm free the Tuesday, Friday, and Saturday evenings of that week, but my Monday and Wednesday are accounted for. So that's my availability. But
Monday and Wednesday. Wait, what did I said? The week of the 5th?
Yeah.
No, and I said yes. Okay. Oh, that's the week after my daughter's birthday. So, okay. So, Chuck, you said no Monday and Wednesday, correct?
Correct. Monday and Wednesday is also a conflict for me. So, you know, Tuesday or Thursday is okay.
6th or the 8th. That's what we'll go for. And we will see what works for them. The 6th or the 8th. I'm sure Mike Mirasola from School Construction can come. I'll even invite Lorraine Grillo. Let's see. So let's shoot for that. And then we can
understand. I just want to, Katrina and Nula are both listed on the zoning committee. So I want to make sure that that date works for them if they would like to come.
Yeah, does anyone, Katrina or Nula, are there conflicts on a Tuesday or a Thursday? The Tuesday, the 6th or Thursday, the 8th?
No problem.
Great.
First off, number one, I don't even know what you guys are talking about. You said that so fast. Sorry. Whatever y'all choose to do.
I talked so slow for me for interpretation that now I'm like, blah, 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 blah. So this is about the school that they were building in Long Island City to take the overflow from PS 78. Those kids don't really have a school yet, and they're three grades deep into kids. So they have, and the school was supposed to be built and finished next September, but they stopped because of COVID. And now, even though other construction has continued or started up again, the school hasn't started. And the reason that they're giving is they're not sure if the money is still there, money that they that had been promised for the school. So we have to find out what's happening soon, because next year is going to be here pretty fast. And kindergarten applications are going to be presumably in the next 3 months. So parents need to know the story. So we'd like to have a zoning committee meeting the first week in a full week in October with the community. Does that make sense?
And what dates was that?
The October 6th or the 8th. I'm going to invite the DOE to come, so we'll see what works for them.
That's fine.
Cool. All right. We'll just be in touch over email on that.
What time are you looking at, Deb?
we want them to come. So if they don't care about the time, hopefully early evening, 5 o'clock. I think that's that. And then as far as the Racial Justice Committee, I think we need to put that for early November, because now we've got 3 meetings on the books for October, plus the beginning of school. And this will give Dr. Fergus time to finish his papers. And so we'll push that to at our October meeting. We'll set a date for that meeting. That's all we've got, I think, on our agenda. We can move to new business. Gail, I believe you sent to Danny and Chuck the committee list, or how do we reassign liaison schools?
Since all of the schools are taken, more or less, they need to negotiate on who's willing to give up a school or two, if who's interested.
All right, I'll go back and look at mine and see.
Are we doing this right now?
While I go look this up, does anybody else have new business they want to talk about? Questions, concerns, thoughts?
I have questions.
Yes. Amina.
Okay, I have one of the... Yes.
Hi.
I have one of the parents. How are you doing, guys?
We're good. Go for
good. Okay, I have a few parents because they get confused when... they said the Department of Education sent like the remote or blended. They did remote. They was thinking they're going to be attending the school. And I know the schools they sent, like from the DOE, they said in November they're going to, if they want their kids to be switched to the blended, they have to do the form. They was asking when the form gonna to be sent, the first week of November or the last week of November, if you guys having any idea about the switching from remote to blended.
Right, so it's not going to be that's when the switch takes place. Mid-October,
okay.
The parents get 2 weeks to do it, and then the school has 1 week to process it, so it's mid-October. There is a calendar. Amina, I will send that to you tomorrow, okay. But there is a calendar that they have to follow.
Okay.
These very specific dates. I'll make sure you get that.
Please.
But it's the second weekend in the October that the parents get involved, start filling out the paperwork.
Okay. Second week of October and 1 week for the school. Thanks.
I will offer up.
Mom, I'm just getting my braces.
Some schools.
Anybody have other business in the interim? Yeah.
Just really on school liaisons. I know they're all accounted for, but I would, my kids at PS69. Maybe Scott. I don't know if you want the backup. I'd be happy to be the liaison for that school, unless you have a.
Well,
I'm very generous.
We don't assign your school.
We don't assign our schools to us. Oh, okay.
The recommended practice is that you don't go to the school where your child is. A conflict in a sense. So.
Okay.
Sorry. There's another one on the list of mine,
Scott, give me another one then, Scott, since you seem so... I'll take...
Sure.
PS 152 is nearby. If that works. I'll happily take PS 152.
Not a problem.
I encourage, all right, so I generally like to assign a middle, like a two bands, so you get an elementary and a middle, so you can sort of experience both, and then something in your neighborhood and something out of your neighborhood. So I will look at mine and see. So now you have an elementary. I will take a look. Once I find it, I'll see what I can give to you guys. And then as far as liaison visits and stuff, you know, it's complicated now, but every school is doing SLTs and PTA meetings virtually. You can just hop on. When we were doing visits in person, we always gave the school a heads up, like as a courtesy, I'm going to be stopping by. So they know you're there. They don't feel like, you know, someone's coming to spy on them. So you can shoot the parent coordinator or the principal an email. It's always good to let Dr. Composto know as well. Because he's a great facilitator of, you know, hey, your CEC rep is coming, just FYI, and then it's all copacetic. Dr. Composto does not mind and appreciates CCs on everything that you do, just so he's always in the loop and there's no surprises. So don't feel like you're bothering him by CCing him on stuff.
Can I actually ask a question of Dr. Composto on this topic? I mean, we're all so aware of how overwhelmed our administrators are right now. And so I'm a little bit reluctant. Like I've been in touch with some of my liaison schools, but not all of them. But I'd like to get in touch with them, especially now, because I feel like now is a time when all schools need support, but I don't want to burden an administrator. What is your advice?
So only ask that everybody wait and at least 1 to 2 weeks that we just settle in. We just have to settle in, because what's happening to us, besides all the movement that way, we are getting parents who are saying, just like Amina said, that they want to switch over. So let us just get a week or two running, and then feel free. They'll love to have all of you, but just give us a week or two to figure this out with the staffing and what a program looks like and all this good stuff happening. I think they would appreciate that, and I know I would too. Thank you for asking.
I meant to bring this up earlier. To that end, Dr. Composto, I am so appreciative of you copying us on so much stuff. I do feel bad that it's adding an extra step to your day. That, in combination with the idea that a lot of people really want to know what's going on with their school and cases, made me think, would a District 30 database of sorts be something that would make your life easier, so that, and I don't really know the mechanics of this, but if we could, let's say, put something on our website or on the District 30 website that just had it listed everything in a database format, so you wouldn't have to constantly send out every time there's a suspected case or that. I don't know if that's something that would be helpful to you or not.
The only concern I have with all of this is the whole Privacy Act here. We have to be so careful with this. You know, even when I talk, I can't say it was the teacher, it was the AP, it was the principal. There's so much. You wouldn't believe this HEPA law, what it really does to us. I have such concerns that I would prefer not to. I don't mind, because what I've been doing, just that our new members know, and I will get you on our list, I promise, is sending the letter that we send home to the parent. So I don't mind sending that to you and you doing whatever you need to do to notify the community. But I have to be very cautious with what I say and do with this, because we can be easily sued. Because, you know, we can't talk about other people's medical records. Even just to say, well, if I said something like by mistake, oh, the art teacher has it. I've identified her, even though I didn't give her name. There's only one art teacher in this particular school, in school B. So I'm okay with CCing you on those letters. It makes it more comfortable. This way I'm just giving you the information that other parents are getting. And whatever you want to do with it, of course, I'm okay if you want to tally. Yeah, I would appreciate that.
Be shared out. And do you care if the actual letters get shared out or just the information? No.
Whatever you want, because those letters go to the entire parent community. So I'm okay, you know, there's parents in our community, so I have no problem. If you look, that it's the same letter. Just, you know, it's basically, well, there was two letters saying possible, right? And we started that because we had one school that it was possible and the staff wasn't informed and they were insulted and hurt. And I asked them, I said, just send them possible. We don't know, because the original piece was we were only going to inform communities that we knew. In other words, we were waiting for the positive test, well, you know how these things go. You know, I don't feel good, and so I'm going for a test today for the COVID. And then everything that goes around, I got the COVID, and then parents are all upset. Or more, actually, this week it was our staff members because children were not in the building. So it was our staff members. So I asked them to send out letters that says possible. But now that they have this room all set up, it's really working very nice for us, supposedly. Today was our first day. But they will be sending letters, three letters they'll send out to the staff, informing the staff, to the parents, informing them, very general. And the third letter goes to a teacher that might have been by the person. So what Test and Trace does is say, I have it. They'll call me up and say, okay, Phil, who are you by? More than 15 minutes, that's the limit. So I could say, oh, I was with Jonathan and Scott and Shannon for about a half hour. Then those three people will be quarantined for 14 days. So those are the three letters that they give out. And I would just share with you the family letter, and you certainly can post the whole letter, whatever you want. Like I said, it's a form letter on top of a principal's letterhead.
My personal inclination is that if we're sharing out piecemeal one by one by one, it makes it seem a lot scarier than it is than if you see five cases out of, you know. I was thinking about putting on our website a chart that just lists our schools, and we can have a column for possible cases or confirmed cases. And then it's just a place that parents can go if they so choose, but it's not every day a new wave of letters come, which are alarming if you're getting them every day or every other day. But at the same time, I think parents should be informed. I don't know what that form looks like. I don't know if you guys think that's helpful or irrelevant.
I really appreciate seeing the language of the letter, and I imagine that as this goes on, it might change, you know, and so like
possible.
I appreciate seeing the language of the letter, and I also appreciate seeing it as soon as you send it, which is really great. I'm a little worried that if we made a database, updating the database, there would be more of a lag.
Well, this would be in addition to the school community would still get their letter.
Oh, yeah.
But for the rest of the district who weren't, you know, I don't want the PS 112 community to be overwhelmed with what's happening at PS 78 when, you know, it just adds to the panic, just for the rest of the district to be aware. You know, I haven't shared out those letters because, you know, globally, because it's not necessarily pertinent to everybody, but at the same time, I think people do want to know what's going on two schools down the road.
Yes.
But I think that's more easily digested in a tabulation formulation than in constantly sending the same letter over and over again. That makes it seem more panicky than it might be. But you know, we also don't have to.
Can send the letter to all of you. And then if you want to do a database, feel free. I will always send the letter to you. Once the principal sends it to the community, yeah. I ask them to CC me and I'll just forward it to you.
So, I mean, I, for my own personal, here's what I'll do. For my own, you know, faux math interest, I'm going to just make a Word document with a sort of a spreadsheet of that, and I'll send it around, see what you guys think, if it's worth putting on the website, if it's, you know, we can have our website guy update it once we give him the document. You know, we could just forward him the letters, I can forward them to him as I get them, and he can just add a tally to the chart. If you guys think it's something the community would be interested in, we can update it every week. You know, it doesn't have to be every day. I know, and maybe it's my CEC brain interest that I'm interested in this data, and maybe other people aren't. I don't know. All right, well, I'm going to do that, and you guys can tell me if you like it on email or not. it'll either be for me, for my edification, or we can put it on the website. It's up to you guys. Anything else, folks? 9:20, not bad. If there's anything that you guys want to add to the October meeting, at our October meeting, we're gonna be talking a lot about the Chancellor Town Hall and finalizing questions. Oh, Gail, did you tell Chuck and Danny about our weekly check-ins with FACE? Did you guys hear about, we have a weekly meeting Tuesday mornings with the Family and Community Empowerment Office. So there's an office in the DOE called FACE, FACE, Family and Community Empowerment. They are sort of tasked with being liaisons with parent or the parent branches of leadership. So CECs and PTAs and SLTs. Since we've gone virtual, they've started meeting with us to give updates and take back feedback once a week. So currently those meetings with Juliana Federoff are 8 a.m. on Tuesday. And now you'll be on our distribution list, so you'll see that. But it's a recurring meeting Tuesdays at 8 a.m. for about an hour. And we meet, and not unlike this, she gives us any updates, gives us reports back, anything that we've asked data-wise from her, takes our feedback and escalates it as far as she can take it. And that'll happen next Tuesday for the first time for you. They're not mandatory meetings.
On my desk.
So come if you can. But if you don't, or if you overslept like I did last week, it's okay. and we can talk more then. And obviously you guys, if you have any questions, if anyone, any questions, anytime, shout. Thoughts, feelings?
The only thing I'm concerned with the kids, you know, like say with the after school program, like there's a lot of kids that need after school help. So I've been reaching out to like outside sources and, you know, after school, you know, teachers to see what they're coming up with, because a lot of kids have to deal with the online or what kind of park resources they have to get them moving and to, you know, to accommodate the COVID issue and go by the guidelines. So we're just, you know, sitting back waiting. That's all. Just waiting for everything to come out, because it's just a waiting game. And just ready for the whole, see how the remote learning and how to do the blended learning. Where I choose to send Brooklyn to school because her harp is in jail. They've been in jail since, you know, since the COVID season. So yeah, so.
Ben's daughter plays the harp, you guys, and she's amazing. It's been in jail.
Yeah, it's been in jail. So I know we're trying to get into school. I know we have a cover on it, but you know, to clean it up, to get a hold of it. But she got another partner. So we have two other kids that's trying to join with it because she has a teacher. The teacher's kind of far. So, you know, when you have a more group of kids, you know, she'll be able to come out to the group of kids and do the social distance. So I've been working on that lately because, yeah, with the music, the kids is kind of, you know, closed in trying to get the online teaching with the teachers trying to stay on track. But then their schedules is kind of busy. So that's all. It's just a waiting game for a little bit of everything.
Wow. Well, I'm excited for her to be reunited.
I know. She raised majority of her money for the harp, but you know how things keep coming up. So I said, we're just going to have to just go get it. She raised $500 on her own. Because, you know, so little when she talked, they'd be like, you know, I'm raising money for my, they'd be like, your heart? Like, no, I bought the heart. So every story going to like, they like, she shows a little paper, her form. Well, you know, people be like, oh, you telling a story. Like, no, I have my profile. You
yeah. See.
She has a little wallet and she just flip it like, look.
Oh my gosh, that is too much. You should have let me know. Let me know if she's still fundraising. I'm curious if anyone wants to say what their kids are doing. My kids are going blended.
I'm blended too.
Blended as well.
Ashton's going 5 days at home.
We are a blended team.
Yep.
I'll be remote. Hey,
I'm the difference. He's staying on remote the whole time.
Yeah.
I believe we have three people.
Wait, Fatima. Did you say you're doing fully remote too? I think, right?
Yeah, fully.
Yep.
Brooklyn, she was kind of skeptical, but I said, we got to work it out. We're going to see how it works.
Yeah.
I wanted blended, but my kids wanted to be with me so much. They said, no, please, remote. They couldn't fathom the idea of not being with me.
They miss Katrina, like, school is an iRemote?
The school Katrina? Told me I can't be blended.
What?
Woo!
Due to the drama program, he has to go 5 days remote. Otherwise,
did you say something?
Okay, certain programs.
Is he at Sinatra, Scott?
No, Forest Hills Drama Academy.
Oh, wow.
What?
So if he wants to do drama all 5 days, he has to stay remote all 5 days. Otherwise, he could just go and be locked in a classroom with people that have nothing to do with what he's doing with his music and drama.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
No, he comes to work with me every day now.
It's drama enough, right?
Luckily, I have an office. I made my cubicle.
Katrina, what about tonight? I got to do remote learning to get a couple of days because, you know, on the phone, you know, working from home, you hear them in the background, like, going around. It's like, everywhere you go, it's like, oh, my God. But it's all right.
Yeah, at least I listen to good music, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yep.
Who's that?
Katrina, what's Sinai doing? Is she going in at all?
No, not home. She's doing remote learning.
We're pretty split. I would say we're probably reflective of the district average.
About 30%, basically.
Yeah. So we can have questions and answers for everybody.
Yeah. No, and actually, that's a really important point. You know, I want to wait, give a good solid month before we start collecting data. But I'm very, very
credit card
to know. That's okay. To know what experiences are being had, and I think this is where going to our liaison schools and finding out will be important. You know, are teachers be out of license? Is the math teacher teaching English? You know, what's happening in the schools? Are there ICT special ed teachers? You know, what's happening with dual language? All of these are going to be really important. I think there has to be a grace period of, you know, settling and shuffling, but I think, you know, we can certainly start advocating for whatever's not working once we know what's working and what isn't. But that'll come. Let's open and see what happens.
Just speaking of liaison schools one more time, can I suggest, like, I have some liaison schools that I'm happy to give up to either Danny or Chuck. And I can send them to them, or I can send them to you, Deb, or Gail.
Send them to them, and then just copy Gail so she knows.
And I can help with 78, Jonathan, because I'm close by. I don't know if you want help with that one, but it's up to you.
No, I actually have already a relationship with 78, so I'd like to keep that one. But like 92, 149, or even 150, if you guys wanted to take from me, I could let go of any of those.
Okay.
So, but I don't know how
I'm going to do this. Indifferent. Yeah. I don't know if there's a, Debbie, I don't know if you have a kind of way you like to divvy them up. You're saying IS and a PS, or I'm willing to take either, but I don't know if there's kind
just of a recommendation about to get familiar with different environments. But honestly, whatever works, whatever, you know, like I said to both of you, you know, learning the geography and you know, the different neighborhoods was helpful to me in the beginning. So picking something outside your neighborhood is always a good idea, and something inside so you have a mix. But that was just recommendations, no requirements.
I will grab 92. So I have two schools now. I snatched one from Scott and got one from Jonathan.
Great. Danny, I can give you one or two of mine. I think I have like eight, so.
I can do 150. I mean, I used to live right kind of near there in Sunnyside.
So that leaves me with three, which is that I feel like I should have four, but.
It's fine. I can give you one of mine, maybe. Once I find my list. I mean, it's all okay. If you find that you're bored and want to visit a school, I can give you one of mine, but.
No, that's fine. I'm good with three. Yeah, that's plenty.
That's fine too. We haven't had a full complement of members in so long that, you know, three is fine because we're just not used to it. All right. I don't think we need to belabor our meeting. Anybody, anything else? I'm torn whether to tell my children it's a school night. I don't know what this is, so I'm gonna go maybe get them to bed a little earlier.
Get them to bed and catch up on Netflix or whatever. Yeah.
Since yeah, bedtime isn't a concept anymore, apparently. All right. Okay.
Deborah, I have another question.
Go, Amina.
Okay. I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. I have a parent. Yeah. I have a parent. She has her daughter third grade in the school Growing Green, if I'm not mistaken. And I know they start earlier than public schools. And the mother was confusing because she's saying she's the one who's doing the homework, not the daughter. Mm-hmm. The teacher, they ask them to do digital book. And they have to, whatever homework they are doing it, they have to like update whatever they're doing daily in the digital book. And the mother, she's like saying, I'm helping my daughter. I'm thinking I'm doing it. But in case she's going to go back to school and the teacher going to ask
you're gonna
her. Beth,
you're going to, I'll turn off the lights in a minute. Two more minutes.
Oh. And the teacher going to ask her the same, like to do the same steps she did at home. But the mother said, I know my daughter. She is not going to remember nothing of that. Why they don't just stay with what they're supposed to learn, like talking about the math, why they have to create the digital book. This is not time for that. This is her concern.
Yeah, I mean, that Growing Up Green is a charter school, so we don't really have any say in what they do. I think...
I just want to explain a digital book. A digital book is a notebook. It's just a notebook that a child keeps digital. In other words, they put everything in this, rather than write everything out, they type it into their notebook. So we have a few schools that are using these digital workbooks, notebooks. I really enjoy reading them, by the way. Some kids enjoy, we're finding the schools that use it, kids like the digital book because you know what? It has the spell correct, it helps them. And they seem to be writing more. So it is a good thing. But like Deborah said, there is a charter school. Somebody can call if your parent is that concerned and upset. There is a charter school office in the Department of Education, and she can lodge her concern there if she'd like.
Okay. Okay. I will let her know.
Yeah.
It's different from us.
Yeah, it's a very, very valid question, and it's something that we're going to have to deal with, parents doing their kids' work, and ultimately that hurts the child more than anybody else.
Like what? What I understand, her daughter, she likes to be in class. She don't like to use the electronic a lot. This is why she was concerning, like, if she gonna to, because during, since March, whatever we was out until the end of June, she said she was sitting with her, like, she's in the class. The mother was in the class just for her daughter to do what she's supposed to during the school hours.
So, Amina, I would recommend that she start with the school. If she's that uncomfortable, she needs to talk to the teacher first. And if she doesn't feel satisfied, she can go to the administration, whether the AP or the principal. That's what I would start with. But certainly there is a charter school office that she can speak to.
Okay, I will let her know. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Amina.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, we are at 9:34. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Just as a point of order, we are able to talk to one another over email. That's totally fine. The only thing we're really not supposed to do over email is make any decisions, any decisions like motions and resolutions and things that we should be doing in the public eye. But we can certainly have discussions and conversations and decide things like dates of meetings and things like that are appropriate. So we can, even though we only meet once a month, we can stay in communication. Okay, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Thanks, Chuck. Hi. Keep popping in and out. Hi, cutie. I will second, and all in favor of adjourning, going to bed. Yay. Thank you, Dr.
Yes.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you, Council. We will be talking soon.
Everyone be safe. Good seeing you all.
Welcome, Becca Danny. You're getting off easy. 9:35 is like a record.
Yeah.
We're early today.
I'm starving. I'm in pretzels. That's it. Pretzels and salad.
Good luck, everybody.
Good night. Good to see everybody.
Good luck tomorrow. Yeah, take care, guys.
Bye, Miss Danny. Bye, Miss Josh. Bye, everybody.
Yeah.
Good luck, doctor.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night, guys. Thank you,
Gab. Good
night. Good night. Good luck.
Take care. Thanks. Okay, this.